that I had to pay you double what you included because you didn't realize at that time. And I understand that you didn't realize at that moment that I didn't touch you. But this is an eat at me and has turned my taste against Indian, which I love. I've been here 40 years. And I've been in business here for 37 years. I've tried to pay every tax that I've ever owed. But when I'm double taxed, just because I live in another location, and I'm not in the professional commercial business of buying buildings and renting, I just happen to wanted to hang on to this little office, hoping that the income would help retire. I just don't understand, Mr. Mayor. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm a little confused myself because the building is inside the city limits. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. It's in a lone lot.
And somebody rents that from you and has a business. Not you, but somebody else?
Somebody that I rent to has a business.
Yes, okay. So, but they're in the city.
Yes, sir.
All right, now why would that be double taxing? Because you don't even have the business. Someone else has the business.
I own the building.
You own the building.
And I'm getting the rent, and so they're taxing the rent that
okay.
I get.
Okay, okay.
It's double what anybody else.
It's the rent, then. I don't know. I think that's one of those... One more thing that we've got to look at, really, and try to understand. This has been in effect, what, Lex, 15 plus years or so?
Far longer than that.
Longer than that, yeah.
Can I ask a question? This is James H. Thompson.
Certainly.
I think a lot of this issue, with particularly this gentleman's issue, happened when you all required all persons having commercial properties, whether they're commercial or residential, to register them with the city as an additional property that may be getting rent. And so my question is, if his address for that registration of that money were the address within the city that he put on your form, would he still then have to pay double the rate?
The address that he should be providing to us for business license tax purposes for the for his location of the business should correspond to whatever location he's using for his income tax return.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's an outside city location, then he's going to have an outside city rate. If he's using an inside city location for his income tax return and all his other business purposes, we're going to use an inside city rate.
I'm sorry, Les.
When you've got a location that you're using for your income tax purposes, okay, for the business, whatever business operation it is, if that's those addresses should be one and the same. I was answering her question on which address it would be that we would use.
Do all the out-of-city businesses that do business in the city pay double from what a corresponding business would be?
Absolutely.
If they were local? So, okay.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I suppose.
Please restate what you just said, please.
All the outside city businesses pay a double rate to inside city businesses.
These national companies.
I just live outside the city. And you said I live outside the city, I'm an outside business.
Sounds like you filled out his form wrong.
If your business is based outside the city, I don't remember your individual situation.
Wait a minute. There's a question here. You said you don't understand his...
I don't remember his particular situation. I've got no recollection of that. But as far as when a business comes in and we're classifying them, we're looking at where the business's location is. Okay, so if he gave an outside city address, we're going to use the outside city rates. And the address he provides to us should be the same that he's using for his income tax purposes and everything else for the business.
Are you using two different addresses? Are you using two different addresses?
Yes, no, ma'am. I live on some of the squeeze property back at the old store. That's my address. I have a post office box that I've got when I came here 40 years ago, 41, the same post office box that I just don't want to give the number of. I paid it to some crazy people. But the fact that the building, I've owned since 85, it's in the city. When I bought my house, I didn't even have any question as to where it was, because I didn't know if it was in the city or not. It didn't bother me. But that was 1973, and taxes were nil to what they are today, and especially when you drop from 100% of income to 20%.
Well, this sounds like one that's that it's the addresses that's confusing. If he uses the same address that the property is in the city, that he would not be taxed double.
If his business address were an inside city address, he would be paying the inside city rate.
Okay.
Even if it's a post office box.
We'd have to look at what to do with his business. I'd like to look at it with Mr. Miller. I don't know.
I think for income tax purposes, you have to list the address, the physical address of the building. And if he's to use that address, seems to me like he would be paying inside city rates versus his personal address.
Can the two of you get together?
Sure, I'll be happy to help Mr. Miller.
I think you just need to
get with him.
Get
with Lex.
That we don't live in. And you have to list them.
That's a real nice young man, and he said that's the rule. You live outside the city, you pay double. And nobody can explain to me why, just because I live outside the city, I got to pay double. I mean, my federal tax form shows that business location is the address on Orange Street.
That's what I'm saying. List down.
I had a report. I get the deed list on it. I get to deduct the expenses of it. And I talked to the businessman today, night before last, just cut his advertising from 30,000 to 15,000.
He doesn't live in the city, but the business. But the business is in the city.
To carry advertising
You know, you could solve this problem if you moved inside the city, I think. And then we could go home, maybe. I'm just kidding, Mr. Miller. I'm sorry.
I'm going to the house today. I didn't get any dinner before
came over here. Oh, my goodness. Oh, gee. Well, thank you for what you've said and told us. And
I need somebody to clarify this thing.
For many, many years, I have heard complaints from individuals regarding dual taxation. There are people in the city that are questioned why, if you're a county resident, you don't pay city taxes, and if you're a city resident, you're paying city and county taxes. I have been asked for many, many years to push elimination of dual taxation for city residents. That's easily said than done when you look at what it takes to operate this city. It's nicely said, but you got to do the math in terms of eliminating taxes, one or the other, for city residents. So, but that's an issue, big issue.
And just Mayor, before Lex leaves there, just have him clarify, we have a lot of national companies, and my understanding is they all have branch offices located in the city. It could be a realtor or any type of business. And as long as they have a branch office in this city, they're not double taxed. Is that correct?
If they've got a physical location here in the city, then no.
Okay, thank you.
And again, if a business has businesses in other cities where they're paying those taxes, then that's deducted off of the amount that Lex looks at.
That's correct.
And as council is aware, but just as a reminder, it's not just a business license that for several decades they're paying higher fees. It's water and sewer, it's recreation, it's fire. You know, so council has chosen to go ahead and have higher fees for those that are outside the city that enjoy those services.
Okay, thanks, Lance.
Thank you.
Promise I'm
going to
be brief.
It's okay.
My name's Katie Lipscomb, and I just want to make 2 points. Number one is Lexi talked about double taxation. Mm-hmm. Well, I can talk about quadruple zillion million because I pay, my landlord gets charged a business license. He passes it on to me. Electricity gets charged a business license. He passes it on to me. The phone gets charged a business license. He passes it on to me. If I had private garbage, he would get charged a business license, and he would pass it on to me. In my shopping center, we pay common area maintenance. I pay for cleaning the parking lot, paving the parking lot, the lights in the parking lot, the retention pond, and every single one of those people that come into the city and work in that shopping center are charged a business license and they pass it on to me. When it gets to me and I have little fabric that people can compare prices on everywhere, I cannot absorb all those costs and the price elasticity sets in with me. So that's where our fixed costs are going like this, our volume's going like this, mm-hmm. and that's why we're hurting. So my second point is, I think we kind of missed the point with Ashley's presentation, because I heard her say more than once, let's be the first. Well, in case y'all don't know me by now, I do a lot of research. Mm-hmm. I have 4 or 5 pages on business license facts that I'll be happy to share with you. But the number one thing that has stuck with me through the whole thing is that whenever I looked at every other municipality's ordinance, they're all exactly the same. So they're all cut and pasted from somewhere. So then I start saying, well, where is it coming from? It's coming, I'm not sure, but I assume from the Municipal Association. But then if you look at the Municipal Association is working at the State House to try and prevent any changes to the business license. And then on the other hand, they have the Hometown USA program where they say they're trying to help businesses. So if we can all get together, you could probably go on for days with these kind of cases, and Lex probably needs a raise because, I mean, everybody's angry when they call him because it's just hard for us to handle. But the main thing is, if we can look at it, if we can get maybe some flat rates. There's a declining rate over $1 million. That means Walmart pays less per sales than I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's a lot of facts about the business license that if we would just sit down as a committee and look at them, we can probably make them more fair and not lose the city all the money, but at least make it easy to swallow. So that's just my 2 points I wanted to make. I don't think it's not... Aikens is probably one of the lowest in the state. The whole point is, the whole thing's not fair. So if we can set an example for the state, we could be, you know, up there again, being the first one. So that's my point.
Let me just add that based on what I'm hearing, not here, but beyond these walls, something should be looked at very seriously for small businesses. The larger ones, I think they will manage to make their adjustments, but the small businesses is the fabric we all know for this country and especially for this community. So that's where my interest lies.
And the frustration, quite frankly, is with the state, and we need to put the heat on the state to let the city have control of the program. If we did, I think it would be a lot different. But as I mentioned earlier, we have 2 choices. Are we going to have one, and what are the rates going to be? And that's the only choice the city has.
Everybody's looking at Greenville's program. They're giving incentives to new businesses. Forget about the old businesses, yeah, but the desirable businesses that they want to go in the areas that they want to. Well, that's like a big deal that they've done something different. Well, you could do so many different things besides that. I'm sure you have to have a lawyer involved to see what's legal and what's not, but there are things.
Maybe two.
That, yeah, that could be looked at, that, you know, to see where it could be changed for fairness a little bit.
Well, I'd like us to look at the Greenville, what they're doing in Greenville.
As we said before, we're willing to sit down and keep talking about this thing and see what we can work out. Katie, thank you for your comments.
I think I want to join Mr. Miller for supper.
Okay, anyone else? Anyone else? We've still got a couple hours. Yes. Okay. Everybody, all out of questions or comments?
One quick question. Will you be present May 3rd for the discussion?
Absolutely. Okay. All of our meetings.
3 o'clock, May 3rd.
All of our meetings are open, except when we have to go into executive session for one or two little things, you know, that you can do that from, which we haven't had one in a long time.
Can I ask one last question?
Yes.
Just for you all to get an idea of these people here, because in July, you remember last year, I was the only person in the room asking you all why you support the Municipal Association's lobbyists. How many businesses think that's wrong? Show of hands, clap. If you pay our taxes to lobbyists that keep funneling us in the house. So, just so in July, I'm not the only one here.
Okay, that's right. Well, thank you all for being here. Thank everyone for being here. This has been a very good conversation and discussion, I think. And we've learned some things, too. Okay. I'm sorry, just a minute. I'm sorry, what? Debbie? Okay, let's talk about that together here. Okay, we are adjourned. You know, Debbie.
The best way to make it up.
Gentlemen, welcome to our Aiken City Council meeting. April 26, we welcome you here. We're glad everyone's here, and we look forward to any comments you may have as we go through our agenda. Let me just say that if you do want to make a comment, and we recognize you, then come up to the mic, please, and just give us your name. Don't have to give us an address, just your name, so that we just have it for the record in case we miss something, have to come back to you to get a comment or something, okay? And excuse me, as we get started in our meeting, if you would stand with us for our prayer and our pledge of allegiance.
Lord Heavenly Father, we just come here tonight. We just give you thanks and praise for blessing our city in such a wonderful way. We just ask that you continue to find favor over the staff, our citizens, all of many volunteers that work so hard to make our job so easy and to make this city such a great place to live. We ask as we review the various items and discuss them tonight that you would give us open hearts and minds. Lord, I just ask that you would give us the wisdom and discernment as decisions are made for the betterment of the entire community. We thank you for all that are here tonight and for your presence being here also. And we ask this all in your name. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda this evening? I do have one I'd like to see if council will add. I would like to open up the voting on the issues of the lost items. And in order to do that, we need three votes. But that will be part of our agenda. And I'd like to also suggest that we include it right after number three, make it number four, if you will, and move the ethics report down, because we'll be talking about approval of the local option sales tax memorandum of understanding. So then we can just go right into the issue. the issue at hand on the lost items, which would be the Cumby Center.
Would you agree to doing it after the ethics report?
Sir?
Would you agree to it after the ethics report?
Would I agree to what, Dick?
To move it to after the ethics report, to number five?
Before the ethics report, right? I said number four, make it number four right after the local option sales tax memorandum of understanding, because we'll be talking about the same subject. But just move that there.
The discussion on ethics is also has an impact on that as well.
Well, I don't particularly care where you want to put it. You want to put it five if it has an effect on ethics?
Mr. Mayor, if I may, what you want to do, the best thing to do may be to move number four to number three, change number three to number four, and include as part of the new number four the reconsideration of the vote last week.
All right, we'll move number four up then, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That becomes three. And then the one I was just mentioning, opening up the voting, would be actually five, I guess, or part of four. Is that understandable to everybody? Anything else?
You need three council members to agree to reconsider the vote.
Okay. Do we have three that will reconsider the vote?
Can you tell me the purpose of reconsidering?
The purpose would be to discuss Cumby Center in light of the opinions that we've recently gotten and to determine whether or not we want to add them to the special projects list.
Could we discuss Cumby Center in and of itself, and then if it's appropriate?
Well, we've already voted on the four already, right? The four mm-hmm. special projects. Cumby was the fifth.
Well, I think you called for a vote. I don't feel you have any support.
Well, I want to make sure everybody understands what we're doing.
Yeah,
If any other council members want to consider adding the Cumby Center to the list, that's what our attorney is saying. We need three people, right? I'm one of them.
Three of the four that voted last time.
Your rules actually don't require that on a motion to reconsider, on a motion for reconsideration after the previous council meeting has ended. Your rules simply require three council members to agree to add it back to the agenda.
I'd like to agree to add it back to the agenda.
Okay. All right, that's two. Do we have another one? Okay, count to five here. One, two, three, four, five. We don't have three. Okay. Okay. Thank you. All right. We need to vote down the agenda as it stands then. Do we have a motion and a second? Unless you have a motion.
Did the city attorney suggest that we talk about number four, we do number three, or does that... talking about the Cumby Center effect...
At this point, you would not be talking about the Cumby Center at all.
I know, but do you think four should go before three, or does it make any difference to you at this point?
It makes no difference.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. All right. Do we have a motion and second to accept the agenda as it stands now?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, second. Any discussion anymore? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously. Okay. The first item on the agenda, then, is consideration of the minutes of the work session and the regular meeting of April 12th, 2010. The work session of April 20, 2010. Any discussion on the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. On page 71, the first paragraph, it says the motion was approved by a vote of 6 in favor and 1 opposed. That should have been 5 in favor and 2 opposed. And Councilman Ebner and DeWar opposed the motion.
Okay, sir.
That's the only correction.
Okay, anything else anyone has? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passage unanimously. Under old business, first item is appointments to boards and commissions.
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
I think you need to clarify what we just did to our citizens on the Cumby Center. Amen. Be sure they understand what the procedure we just went through did.
Okay. In order to reconsider, the vote to add the Cumbia Center back on the list. It took three, as our attorney told us, and we only had two that said they wanted to reconsider. That didn't mean it was necessarily going to be passed, but just to reconsider. So we only had two council members to agree, right? Yes. You want to add to that?
Mr. Mayor, I would only add that the vote that council took last week on how you were going to spread the money out among the various projects, all of the city projects, and then the other four projects that council voted on last week, when you made that vote, that was a final vote. And then your rules allow you to reconsider that vote after that meeting has adjourned, if you have three council members who are willing to vote in favor of that motion to reconsider that vote, mm-hmm. and bring it back before council. Since you only had two members voting in favor of that motion for reconsideration, then the motion fails and you're not able to reconsider the vote that you took at the last meeting.
Okay.
So, in other words, the vote at the last meeting is final. Council cannot consider adding the Cumbie Center okay. as part of that.
Who are the two that voted for the Cumbie Center, please? Who was the other person?
Thank you. We're talking about who? We voted to have it reconsidered.
Thank you.
Okay, moving to item one then, appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have one appointment before you tonight, and that's Councilwoman Clyburn has recommended appointment of Carmen Rowe to the Community Development Committee to replace Robert Kelly Sr.
Okay, do we have a motion? Second.
I move, Mr. Mayor, that we approve the nomination.
I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item two is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to adjust the water rate, water and sewer rates. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to start this off by reading the title. The title of this is Establishing New Charges for Water and Sewer Services. Over the past couple of years, the water and sewer is a standalone account. The revenues that we get from this come only from the sale of water and sewer, and obviously the expenses that we have has to equal the revenue. The last year we fell $1 million short, not as much water was being used. This year we already see that we're going to fall about another $1 million short. And to make up the difference, we will need an increase of 11.3%. When we looked at this, we looked at a number of different factors in this consideration for City Council. Number one, we looked at the Public Service Authority, which treats all of our sewage for the county. We were paying under $1 million 10 years ago. This past year, we paid $2.1 million, or over 100% increase from the Public Service Authority over that period of time. Their increases were averaging over 10% a year. We looked at the city of Aiken, and our rates compared to 30 other major cities and some of the smaller cities right in our area to see where we stood with all these different municipalities and water providers. It showed that we should have probably been having increases over the last several years. We have not had a sewer increase since 2007 and a water increase since 2008. Consequently, our rates are 56% lower. 56% lower than the average for the state with these cities. And even with the 11%, we'll still be about 9% lower than the city of North Augusta, which is probably the closest and most comparable we can make within our area. We already know that when we looked at next year's budget, SCE&G is going up substantially. They got about a 10% rate increase that we have to look at. If we would have continued at the same increases that we were seeing, in 2008, we had water sales of $6.7 million, and the sewer sales the year after was $5.1 million. This next year, if we even could reach those, we wouldn't need the kind of rate increase we're talking about. We'd only need about a 2.5% rate increase. But we've just seen that dramatic decrease in the amount of revenues in both areas in the past few years. We also have some related charges for cutting the water on and off and reconnection, after hours reconnection, to more be in line with the rest of the state. This would not affect 99% of the customers we have. Only those that have been delinquent in their payments or are new to our system would be included in within those areas. An 11.3% increase for the average customer. That means that for some customers that use a lot more water, it'll be higher, but those that use less water, it'll certainly be a lot less. It comes up to $3.84 a month. For an elderly person, one or two people in the household, that's probably about half that amount. Again, for those individuals that do a lot of irrigation, use a lot of water, it could easily be much higher than that. But the average amount would be $3.84 per month. We gave you a couple of choices at the last meeting, saying that we could look at a smaller increase now with an automatic larger increase. We don't hit our revenue projections by October, and those projections would be reached if we had a drier summer and there was more water use. You chose at the last meeting to go with 11.3%. So next year's budget does include several larger construction projects. That has something to do with the rate increase, but we've also been collecting funds over the last several years through what we call impact fees for sewer and water for new customers that will primarily be used for that. And this does look at being neutral on our capital costs in a 10-year period of time. So City Council did approve this ordinance at the first reading last 2 weeks ago, and this is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to increase our water and sewer rates by 11.3% plus the associated fees in Exhibit 7.
Okay, thank you, Roger. This is the second reading and public hearing, and if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. My name is Ann Dix. And reading through the memorandum, Mr. Mayor, it seems that the Aiken County, they're asking you, they're saying they're going to increase it 8%. Is this what I'm reading? Recently received a letter.
Yeah, so far it looks like it's an 8% increase. They have gone up at mid-year at times also, but right now it looks like an 8% at this point.
Okay, and...
But over the last 10 years, it's been well over 100% increase. So they've been averaging well over 10% a year.
It would be well in half over 10%. Okay, did I hear you say that the increase, did I hear you say it was due to the capacity that people were using?
Okay, again, just 2 years ago, there was water usage of $6.7 million. We're projecting with this rate increase that hopefully we'll get up to about 6.8. It's just the last 2 years there was very little water being used for irrigation. It was a very wet summers, and that's where most of our revenue comes in. So the 11.3% is based on this year's amount of usage that we have.
Okay, so then could it not be said then that people are becoming conservative and using less of the resources, and why would you penalize them for being conservative if you say use less energy, use less water, and then you're going to increase the rate? Isn't that penalizing them for being
I think that certainly could be, especially in the times we're in. But the main reason we think was because of the rain that we had over the 2 years. We've got a chart here that shows, we were going up, we were at a good rate,
I guess the concern on this, and I mean on this, is that Everybody's asking for an increase. South Carolina Electric and Gas is asking for an increase. You know, Water City's asking for an increase. Salaries, nobody gets an increase. We can't even keep up with inflation. A lot of people, as you know, Aiken is people on fixed income, some may be high fixed income. I'm one of them in the middle of income. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just, could we take the 8% and then see what it comes, you know? You know, we may.
Well, we talked about, you know, as Roger mentioned, we talked about the 5% and then waiting this summer and see what happens, you know, whether people are using water, if it doesn't rain as much. But in that span of time before the decision would be made, we would lose, what was it, $200,000 more, you know, waiting and hoping that maybe... Maybe it's not going to rain as much. Well, we've been through that 2 years. We really were. We made a decision not to increase, hoping that, you know, we would be the use of water would maintain its level the way it was going on the graph, but it didn't because we had more rain than we thought, and perhaps people did cut down certainly because of that.
Okay, what would be the impact if they only approved the 8% increase? And then it seemed what would be the next increase that they came back at mid-year and asked for.
But again, that would all depend on how much water usage we had this summer.
Okay. I mean, you know, just
if there was more water usage, there would not have to be as much of an increase.
There again, people may use, you know, I'm still, the, you know, we're still in this quandary. People start using less water, then what you're doing is increasing the rate for people who can. Who would be in conservationists. And that's all I wanted to say.
I hope you understand we're in a hole. We're losing a lot of money. And by reducing what the increase is, all we're going to do is, like, if you're digging a hole with two shovels, you stop digging with one shovel. We're still digging down deep. 11.3 is the one that would make us well. I mean, this is basically a fee for service. This is not something, you know, intangible. I mean, it's a service. It's people that, you know, take the water and, you know, the sewer process and so forth. And the reason, you know, you mentioned the 8%, but the 8% is on top of all the other increases that had been passed. You know, if you want to go with the 8%, perhaps if we go back in history and look at all the other increases that were imposed on us by the people that processed the sewer, I think you'd find that 11.3 is very, very reasonable at this time.
Again, I see a pattern because, as I say, if people decide, and here again, in efficiency, using less water, getting low, you know, getting most that use less water for sewer and all of that, is that... It just seems like it's, because what you're telling me is the less water you use, then that's the higher our percentage is going to go up.
It's not strictly related to water usage and how much the bill is. We also have projects that need to be done to the sewer system that have not been done through the years, and we have accumulated a lot of those projects over the years. I think Roger, in chart 4, which is in your packet, pretty well highlights that. When you look at the very bottom, the balance of debt, and you can see the millions of dollars in projects that we have to do in the next 4 years. The very top of that chart, it's 7.5, 9.5. It's almost $10 million between now and 2013. $10 million worth of projects that need to be done to keep the sewer system in good repair. A lot of the pipes are old. We talked at the last council meeting on the fact that, in retrospect, it probably wasn't wise not to have rate increases in the past several years because we needed to put that money towards these projects that need to be done. And it's not to say that there won't be another increase next year, depending on the nature. This year we're going to be looking aggressively at the condition of our system, and that will tell us if help us to find what needs to be done. So it's not simply a case of if you don't use enough, we're going to charge you more. This money is going towards projects that need to be done to the water and sewer system.
Okay.
You had also mentioned, Ann, that you know, the 8% that Aiken County, the last 3 years we have not passed on their other increases, which were over 25%.
Okay.
You know, that's you know, and should we have done it? Hindsight says yes, we should have, but we were trying not to go ahead and pass on every increase we got, hoping that there would be the water sales, hoping there would be the usage, and that would make up the difference. It just has not worked out that way.
Okay. So about the project in the sewer, then, is that making them more efficient? That somewhere in the future we will see an investment on.
Oh, I would expect so. I have to believe that there's water leaking out of the pipes that we don't even know about.
Okay.
But I would have to expect so.
Okay. And there are areas of Aiken that are not as new as other areas, and so they're. Sewer pipes and sewer lines are older, and we don't really know what's right. We don't really know what's there, and because we've not been going under to see what's there, we need to do that now.
Okay.
And that's why that's the basic reason that we're supporting the increase, is that we really need to make sure that all of a sudden we don't have a crash in our underground under the ground systems.
Okay.
And we really need to look at those.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay.
Thank you, Ann.
John Wade. I need clarification on that from Mr. DeWar and Ms. Clyburn. My understanding that the 11.3% was not going to cover any of the infrastructure that's existing on repair or the study. That was all in the 1 cent sales tax.
If you don't mind, I'd like to answer that. We have two different types of capital that we're looking at, and it gets confusing. One would be newer capital expansion of the system.
Which is in the 11.3%.
Which is in the 11.3%. And the 1 cent sales tax, the local option sales tax, the 1 cent, is covering the renewal of sewer and water lines.
Which is correct. So my understanding and comprehension of what was just told this lady is that the repairs of existing will not be covered in this 11.3%. It's going to be covered in the 1 cent sales tax.
It will not.
The sewer evaluation study is in the 11.3%. A new jet truck is. The maintenance of these lines and point repairs of these lines, things that we're going to be doing with our crews, is in the O&M budget.
In the 11.3.
If you were going to replace a line totally, let's say in Carlson Park, like we have done, or the water line going down Whiskey Road needs to be totally replaced, that would come out of the 1 cent capital project sales tax.
Okay, I misunderstood that last.
And I apologize. I probably helped that confusion.
Jane Page Thompson. Can I ask a dumb question? Can lost revenue not go towards these kind of improvements to our water and sewer systems, since without water and sewer we wouldn't get tourism anyway?
The local option sales tax can or cannot have a nexus with tourism. It's used for capital projects. And we have chosen to go ahead and do things like road repair, our streetscape, recreational projects, water and sewer. And so we have chosen to go ahead and take a portion of our capital improvements and use local option sales tax money to do some of the work. I mean, you could go ahead if you wanted to and take all the money that we get in local option sales tax and use it for water and sewer. The intent, though, is that water and sewer is supposed to pay for itself. I don't think the original intent of the 1 cent sales tax was totally support of water and sewer system.
I have a second question. Having done the water study that you've done, Mr. LeDuc, do you foresee our mill rate increasing as well?
The millage rate has decreased, I think, 4 or 5 times in the last 20 years, and the taxes have not gone off. And I should let the mayor does a better job at this than I do. But it's been 21 years since the taxes have been increased, and the two have nothing to do with one another, because the water and sewer is a standalone account.
So in a couple of months, we're not going to see a request to increase our mill rate?
No. I've already concluded the budget for this year, and there's no millage or tax increase.
Thank you.
Well, the budget's not been looked at by the council, but
no,
your plan
she,
is.
She was asking if the budget had something in there, and the answer is no.
Anyone else want to speak? If not, it's back to city council.
I just have one question. The packet does an excellent job, and I finally understand it in terms of the revenues, but is it correct to say, Roger, that, and I was asked this question and couldn't give an intelligent answer, we've obviously spent $11.4 million, let's say, in 2009. Can I assume because we were $1 million short that our expenses relating to water and sewer were $12.4 million? Or is that $1 million part of the $1.2 million that we didn't put in depreciation?
Let me see if I got your numbers correctly. The $11.4 million that we had in revenue, is that what you're asking?
Yes.
When we gave you the budget last year for approval, it included $1.2 million, which would be set aside for depreciation for future items that you're going to go ahead and replace.
Yes.
We did not bring in enough revenue, so when we balanced the water and sewer account, $1.2 million did not go into depreciation.
Did any go in? Well, $200,000 should have gone in then.
I believe, where's Kim? I don't have the numbers. You recall how much went in, if any? She's thinking. So she's thinking something went into it, but
yeah, okay.
If our revenues were higher than expenses, we put more than $1.2 million in depreciation. If our revenue was not as high as we had projected, then less than $1.2 million went into depreciation.
And the expenses are involved with wages, equipment, delivery systems, repairs?
I like to look at it three different things. You got wages, you got operation and maintenance of the system, and then you have capital improvements.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, do we have a motion and second on this?
Mayor, I so move that we approve the increase as stated.
Second.
Okay, we have a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, it passes unanimously. Okay. Let's take the ethics report by city attorney next. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As part of your agenda package, you were provided with a couple of memoranda that were prepared by me. One was prepared last week. The other one, although it says it was dated April the 20th, 2010, I wasn't smart enough to figure out how to tell my computer that I had actually written that last summer, and the computer just gave it an automatic date change. So I apologize for that. I'll address the first memo first. You'll recall at the last meeting, Councilmember Duar reminded me that he had talked to Ms. Hazelwood at the State Ethics Commission about whether or not it was appropriate for him as a potential member of the Board of Directors of a 501c3 organization, a nonprofit organization, to participate in council discussions when the possibility of funding such a 501c3 nonprofit organization was actually before council. In the past, the concern has been whether or not a council member would receive any financial benefit from a vote involving such an organization. And obviously, if you're serving on the board, you don't typically get paid to serve on those boards. At least that hasn't been my experience. My experience is you end up having to pay to be on those boards. After the meeting, I got in touch with Ms. Hazelwood, who is legal counsel for the State Ethics Commission, and she shared with me a recent consent order that had been brought before the Ethics Commission. And it's a pretty, in my opinion, it was a very, to me, it was a very liberal interpretation of the state law. What happened in this particular case, the council member that was being complained against was married to his wife, who was a member of the board of directors of a Rotary Club down in the Myrtle Beach area. That Rotary Club had a 10K race that they sponsored every year, and in the past they had asked for accommodations tax funding from the city to advertise the race.
And in the past, they had actually received some money from the Accommodations Tax Committee. In this particular year, the request went forward. Apparently, there weren't enough funds to fund everything. And the it was the recommendation of the Accommodations Tax Committee that no funding go to the Rotary Club for that particular year. The council member who was married to the board member raised his hand during the meeting and just asked the question, you know, why wasn't the Rotary Club funded? And apparently somebody complained to the Ethics Commission, and this went up. And the Ethics Commission was very clear with him that, you know, the statute says no public official, public member, or public employee may knowingly use his official office, membership, or employment to obtain an economic interest for himself, a member of his immediate family, an individual with whom he is associated, or a business with which he is associated. The Ethics Commission interpreted his act of asking the question as he was knowingly using his official office to obtain an economic interest for a member of his immediate family. To me, that's an extreme way to interpret that statute. But that's the way the State Ethics Commission is approaching that statute. And so I wanted council to be aware of just how severe they are interpreting this rule. What it tells me is if you are on the board of directors of any corporation, regardless of whether it's a for-profit corporation or a not-for-profit corporation, and they are coming before council, frankly, it doesn't even have to involve an economic interest. If they're coming before council for any reason at all, council members should recuse themselves from that discussion. Ms. Rideout has forms that council members can sign to explain to the public why they are getting out of that meeting. Council members should leave the room, not participate in the discussion, make sure you don't have any side discussions with your fellow council members, and leave that matter alone, whether it's a for-profit, not-for-profit, whether it's you or whether it's your spouse. Immediate family would include sons, daughters, mothers, fathers. And so it's, you know, something you need to be very careful with. Candidly, I think what they're telling you with this opinion is they're probably telling you public officials shouldn't serve on these boards or commissions or these nonprofit agencies. And I know a lot of you do that. But if that entity is ever going to have any kind of business before city council, and it seems like more and more of them do now, it's probably a wise idea for y'all to refrain from being involved in those organizations. The second memo in the file was simply to remind you, if you ever have a question as to whether or not there may be a conflict of interest and maybe you should vote, maybe you shouldn't vote, frankly, if the question popped up into your mind, you probably shouldn't vote, period. Okay, but if it's still something where you're just not sure, then the best approach is outlined in that memo where we're allowed to go to the State Ethics Commission. They will issue us an informal opinion that will protect you in the event you do decide you want to participate in that discussion and vote. Obviously, they have to tell you it would be okay for you to do that. If they issue the opinion that you should not do that, then obviously the best advice would be to stay away from those discussions. Does anybody have any questions about any of that?
Yeah, could you discuss your role as an advisor to the council as we proceed with some of these issues? And secondly, and most importantly, does this have an impact on the vote that we took last week in the local option sales tax?
I don't believe there's any impact because Ms. Clyburn left the room, and Ms. Clyburn, at the previous council meeting, was a member of the board of directors of the Cumbie Center. It's my information that she has resigned that position,
okay,
based on this opinion that I've rendered. And my recollection during that meeting is that Ms. Clyburn did leave the room while the Cumbie Center vote was being discussed. Obviously, the best way to... I know it's not uncommon for council members to ask me, is it okay if I vote on this particular issue? And I respect that.
the ethics opinions are not reported to us like our state Supreme Court opinions are and our Court of Appeals opinions are, and so it's not as easy for a lawyer to keep up with all of the opinions that the State Ethics Commission renders. Okay, this opinion about the Rotary Club lady is not publicly reported. You have to get it from the State Ethics Commission. And so your best approach is to identify a potential conflict early. Let me know. I'm happy to help you write the letter to the State Ethics Commission to get the informal opinion letter. But once you get that informal opinion letter, it does something that my opinion can't do. And if you are subsequently complained against by a member of the public, one of your constituents or somebody like that, and they file the complaint, anybody can file the complaint with the State Ethics Commission. But if you have that informal opinion in your hand from the Ethics Commission, chances are they're going to disregard that complaint. I can't give you that power. And so that informal opinion is very powerful to you as a member of council. You don't want that ethics complaint filed against you. If you do this long enough, chances are you may have one filed against you. That informal opinion would be very valuable if that happened to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I just have one question. Not question, but something to ponder. And that is that there are a lot of wonderful boards and agencies in town that do a lot of good work. And I've served on a number of them, not because I'm a member of council, but because I have some type of affiliation with maybe the cause that they stand for. You have the Red Cross, Library Board, Children's Place, Aiken Cooperation. All of those are 501c3, if I'm not mistaken, and you can tell me which ones are not. But I believe they all are. And I could go on and on and on and name all these boards. And we always, all of us at some point or another, have been affiliated with some of these agencies. And I think It's becoming, for me, you know, it's becoming, I want to say mean, but I don't want to really use that word, but I think it's becoming a bad thing that we as citizens of this town cannot feel free to support a cause. I don't know whether I walked 2 miles or 3 miles Saturday for the March of Dimes. And I hope nobody pulls out the ethics report and say that was wrong for me to do. I support groups that do the things for cancer in the spring, and I hope that's not wrong. I'm not on the board at Helping Hands, but Lord knows I help in any way I can. If it has to do with children, I feel like I need to work with it, and so I don't want to feel like I can't serve the citizens of Aiken in other ways. I am, and I guess it's okay to say this, Gary, I am a Christian, and so I work with Christian organizations as well. But I think if it's bad for me to work with the Cumby Center, I think it's just as bad to work with, for any of the others to work with any of these. And I want you to fess up if you're on any of these boards, because Lord knows they all come to us at some point or another for things. And just let me know so I can be clear in my mind, because I'm not feeling real good about this, about the turn that this has taken.
Well, I was the one that asked the question, Mrs. Clyburn, and I asked the question because I was confused initially. At one point, you might recall, we were given a memo from the city attorney which said that we could be sued if we challenge anybody's failure to recuse themselves. And it's not a case of not being able to support any of the charitable organizations in Aiken. You certainly can. You just can't vote for them. We cannot participate as a group or individually for discussions in which they're the subject. It's as simple as that. It doesn't mean that you can't be a Christian, you can't support the Cancer Society, you can't support the March of Dimes. Many of us do. It just means when they come before the City Council, the public has a right to know whether we're conflicted or not. and by...
Well, I agree that the public has a right to know, but they have a right to know from all of us.
Well, I can tell you I'm a member of no board or organization. I was on the first tee. I was with Friends of the Library. I have no others. I'm willing to say that. And if we want to go around the horn, that would be wonderful. People can tell us what boards you're members of.
I don't really need that. I'm just saying I think we need to be real clear on this as to what we're doing, because we're people that lots of people know, and when I judge men running in high heel shoes, I have fun doing that, and they have fun doing that, and it's for a good cause, and I don't want to feel like I can't do that anymore. Mr. Mayor.
Well, Beverly, I think the key boils down to if we feel like it's wrong, let's ask somebody before we do anything. Gary, I think you said that. I mean, I think we've all said that at one point or another. You know, if it feels like it's not right, certainly ask somebody. And
if I may add one more thing before Mr. Brody, I just wanted to finish my discussion on the memos. The third memo that's in your file is dated January the 16th of 2002. It talks about conflicts of interest for public officials sitting on various boards. This opinion was given to me by Ms. Hazelwood from the State Ethics Commission simply to answer the question whether or not it was okay for a member of City Council to serve as a member of the Board of Directors for the Aiken Corporation.
That's my question.
And what this opinion tells us is if you are sitting on that board simply as a result of your official capacity as a public official, in other words, if you weren't a member of City Council, you would not be sitting on the board of the Aiken Corporation. And if you were voted out of City Council, retired from City Council, or quit, and you lost your position on the board of Aiken Corporation, then that would be deemed to be you acting in your official capacity as a council member. It is okay for you to serve on the Aiken Corporation board in that instance.
And vote, correct.
And vote. Yep.
Yes, and we can vote. We have to vote both places, too.
Correct.
Both
that's
on
correct.
The corporation and as...
That's correct.
Because it is an arm of the city.
That's correct.
Okay. That answers my question.
I figured that might be your question.
Well, we got a situation where the city organized the Aiken Corporation.
Yeah.
And as part of that charter, and insisted along with other individuals that two members of City Council be on that board. So if, you know, they had to abstain from voting, that could have a very negative effect on our relationship with the city, I think. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I have a question for our attorney. If a council member sits on council but serves in a capacity as a corporate representative on a board, should he or she recuse themselves as a corporate representative?
Yes.
Okay.
And what you have to understand is they are interpreting the language, what I consider to be, I don't want to say the word liberal, I would call it liberal, they interpret the language very broadly. They don't interpret it, it's not strictly construed.
City Council is not mentioned, it's a corporate representative.
No public official, that's you, may knowingly use his official office to obtain an economic interest for himself, a member of his immediate family, an individual with whom he is associated, a business partner or somebody like that, or a business with which he is associated.
Economic interests.
Mm-hmm. For the individual.
For the whatever the entity is that, that...
This is a volunteer board?
Yes.
Okay.
Remember, the council member in question, his wife was a member of the board of directors of the Rotary Club. And he got in trouble for asking the question, why didn't Rotary get funded this year?
I think I'm missing the point here.
Okay.
This is a board that does not come to council for requests.
Okay.
But you're saying that...
No, if they're not coming to council to ask for anything from the city,
okay,
then you're not involved.
But if they set foot in here asking for money to help whatever,
any cause,
you need to walk. You need to leave the room.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Yeah. Well, you know, if they're not coming to ask for anything, but have an interest in some other kind of way, have an interest in something that we must act on, then we must recuse ourselves, right? Okay.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Thank you, Gary, for that report. Let's go back to what was item 3, approval of local option sales tax memorandums of understanding. Mr. LeDuc, please.
At the last meeting, council approved items under the 1 cent sales tax. There were four agencies covered under the 1 cent sales tax that, to qualify as for public purpose, we felt that we needed to have a legal agreement. And until they get started on some of these projects, it's difficult to get that total legal agreement. So we wanted to at least have a memorandum of understanding that council could review and look at, and those agencies could review and look at. All four agencies have had an opportunity to look at this, and to my understanding, they have all looked at it, and they all feel comfortable with what we have here. So I wanted to go through this, and if you feel comfortable with it, then the different agencies are going to take this back to their board and they're going to vote on it. Some have met with the executive committees already, some have already reviewed it and feel there's no problems. But the first one is with the SPCA. The SPCA is a little different than the other three in that we already have a contractual agreement with them. We've had this contractual agreement since the 80s, so for the last 20-some years, we have worked on an agreement where they take any animal from the city, whether it's from a citizen or from our personnel. They'll board those animals. They try to adopt them, and they provide us space at their facility. So the agreement allows us to go in there. In return, they are going to go ahead, in this case, for the money that we would be giving them, the $1 million, they would go ahead and provide us office space and take the animals within their new facility. Is there any question on the SPCA? And Ben, if you, why don't you come on up here, Ben, so at least you could comment as we go forward. And I know there's representatives here from the SPCA, and I believe they've had an opportunity to at least review this, and you're in basic agreement with it. Okay.
When you say they basically agree with it, that means we can approve it tonight, or this is just for information?
I would prefer we approve these if they have no problems with it. That way they can go forward with it. Okay? So, is there anything else that you want to say on the SPCA one?
I did exchange some emails with the SPCA, and they did ask for some minor changes.
Okay.
One was basically under, on the second page, you have C, and then item 4 under C. They wanted to reword the indemnification clause. Their concern was they didn't want to be liable for any actions of our animal control people. And this one's a little different from the others because we're going to actually have city animal control officers there. And they basically gave some language to make clear that we would be responsible if it was something a city employee working there did, as opposed to just a blanket. Other than that, that's really the only change they wanted to that, which appeared to be reasonable.
Ben, for the sake of our audience here who may want to know a little bit more about this,
okay.
Not all of it, I'm sure you don't want to know, just touch on the lease arrangement there and just the very basics of what this understanding is.
Well, basically the understanding is pending the this getting on the ballot by the committee, the Aiken County Capital Sales Tax Committee. They're the ones who would have actually put it on the ballot. And the next condition, if the voters actually approve this, then we're agreeing to enter a lease agreement at that time. And in this situation, the city would be leasing space from the SPCA for our animal control officer, and also sufficient space to house the animals that will be turning into the facility. And this would go along with a contract we already have for services with the SPCA that's going to continue. We currently take animals to their facility, and we have a contract for them to house it. In general, that's what it is. Basically, we would get to use, the city would be able to use that space for, the agreement is $10 a year in exchange for the $1 million in local option capital project sales tax going to the SPCA to build this new facility.
Okay, how about item one or two, and two maybe, on the second page there? Where they will lease the facility to the city of Aiken.
They're going to lease it to the city of Aiken, and like we will have offices for our animal control officer and his assistants, and also have space for animals that we bring there.
Okay, all right. And the terms of that?
99 years.
99
years. I'm reading it. I just want Ben to
99 years, $10 a year will be there.
Okay.
There's item two is just a restriction to make sure that any revenue that the city distributes to the Aiken SPCA will go just to the construction of the animal shelter. And this is revenue from the capital project sales tax, because that is for building of infrastructure, so it shouldn't go to services or employee salaries or anything like that.
Right.
And three makes is a clause where they cannot assign this lease without approval of city council, they being the SPCA. Four is the indemnification, or where they hold us harmless for things that happen on the premises. And
okay, that's thank you.
You're welcome.
I have some questions. The whole purpose of this agreement, is it not, is to make sure that the $1 million given to the SPCA is used for infrastructure to protect the taxpayers' money.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. That's the main purpose of it. And the idea is, by having this agreement and it being a lease agreement, if for some reason any of these organizations, SPCA or the other ones we may talk about, if they did not use it for the proper purpose, the city would have a remedy to go in and protect the taxpayers' interest.
And what would the remedy be in this particular case with this memorandum of understanding?
Well, in this case, you know, we under the our remedy actually would be under the lease agreement that we will sign in the future. But our remedy would be to actually go in and break the lease with them and pursue it under that lease agreement to, depending on what remedy a court actually gave us at that point, but it could include the return of money, or money being them to use other money to compensate to put back in from what they took to make sure that they spent the entire amount on the infrastructure.
Well, what I'm getting at with the leading questions is, are we going to essentially to give them $1 million? Are we essentially requiring them to give us a deed to all of the land on the animal shelter?
We are not on the SPCA situation, because it is different from the others in that there's actual space that the city will be utilizing and actually having office. So we're in a situation where we can enter a lease with them, where we can lease from them in this situation. We'll actually be utilizing the facility.
Can we lease a facility that we don't own?
They would be leasing this facility to us in this situation, because we would have office space, we would have...
Okay. And all right.
And the others we would be leasing to the entity.
Okay. Is there a need to incorporate our normal year-to-year agreement, which has been in effect since July of 2001, into this memorandum? That just seems to be... I'm not sure I see the need to have that agreement in there. That's a
that was there just for case you wanted to see what agreement we currently are under.
Okay, but it won't be part of the memorandum of understanding.
No,
okay.
I just wanted you to see that we had a contractual agreement with them, and what the most of you probably have never seen this, and was established back in the 90s and then renewed in 2001. So it was just for so that you'd have something you could see.
Okay.
I got a quick question. Shouldn't the facility that we're leasing be defined a little bit more specifically? Is it the whole complex? Is it just a part of the complex, or is it the whole facility?
That would be in the ultimate lease agreement. The memorandum establishes that the city and the SPCA, at some point in the future, if y'all agree to this, and the citizens of Aiken County vote to approve the referendum. If both of those things happen, then at some point in the future, we will negotiate a 30-page lease document that will have all of that information in it.
Okay. Thanks.
So what does it mean if we approve this memorandum?
What you're saying is if the citizens of Aiken County vote to approve the referendum, that at that point the city will agree they're going to give the SPCA $1 million. The citizens have said we're going to give the SPCA $1 million, and the SPCA will be entering into a lease agreement with us for the space that we need.
Which comes first? Do we have to have the agreement before we give the money?
It'll be one of these.
Okay.
Ben, let me...
But the referendum has to pass before anything happens.
I understand, yeah. I'm surprised that we're doing it so quickly. I mean, there's not be any money available until 2012. But
before you wanted to have Mr. Brody go and represent the city as your representative, saying the city of Aiken wants to give $1 million to the SPCA, you wanted to make sure the SPCA was going to enter into this agreement with us that would protect the city.
Well, they've all said they're going to enter into the agreement. The question, right, however, is can we come to terms with all four of them? And to do that within a week of or 2 weeks is asking a lot. But
that's how good Ben Moore is. He's done that for you.
Okay.
He has generated the memorandum of understanding, and they've all agreed to it with some minor changes.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that I'm understanding how much we're paying for here. We pay for the boarding fee of animals. Is that right?
Correct. Yes, that's in our separate contract.
Right. Now we're leasing space and we're giving $1 million. I'm just not quite sure how much we're paying for this whole thing up here.
The existing contract that we have with them, which is on a per night basis, mm-hmm. $10, let's say, for a medium-sized animal, will go and continue in effect. The lease agreement, as I see it, or this memorandum of understanding, was again so that if there was any red flags that either council mm-hmm. or the agency had, that we'd get those straightened out before next month. The tax committee starts meeting and going through and establishing this list. I mean, if there were some red flags and one of these agencies that was going to get the money said, hey, I really don't like this aspect of the MOU, or if council said, I don't like it, then we wouldn't be able to proceed any further, and we may have to take them off the list or be modified in some particular way. With the SPCA, the contract that we have with them that's been going on since right around 89-90 is going to continue in effect, where we're paying so much per animal on a per day cost, and they in turn are going to be trying to adopt these animals to the best of their ability. The lease agreement is they're going to be saying this portion of the building we're going to lease to you for the next 99 years at $10 a year. We can't ever foresee that the SPCA will never be here, but if for some reason they wouldn't, that portion of the building that we're going to have under contractual agreement is going to say that portion we can continue leasing from some entity for the next X number of years at $10 a year. And so that's going to give us the guarantee that we have a place for the next 99 years for animals to be sheltered at.
I guess my uneasiness rests with not having any portions of this building, but yet we're in this tremendous investment. We're paying to house the animals, but there's no investment for us except to have a partnership, pretty much.
And again, the investment, this is a $4 million plus building, and we're just investing in a small portion for our use. And in fact, the entire building will be used for animals that come from the city of Aiken for adoption, neuter spay program, etc. Just like we entered into an agreement with the dog park earlier with the SPCA as a partnership. And again, they're here if you would like to ask them any questions. Just come up.
I trust them.
Let's see, perhaps another way to look at this is if there was no group, no volunteer group, no folks that are concerned as they are, and we had to do this ourselves totally, we're talking about a lot of money. So I think this is a very worthy and a very good agreement.
It's a nice,
that we've got.
It's a nice park.
Okay, is that's one.
Are you asking for a vote individually as we go through, which would probably make sense?
We can do that, certainly.
Okay. That would be great.
Okay, do we have a motion and a second?
I move approval of the Memorandum of Understanding with the SPCA.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second, okay. Any further discussions? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously.
The second agreement is with the YMCA concerning the indoor pool. Again, it's fairly much the same memorandum for the next three. The total dollar amount is going to change from memorandum to memorandum. And if you look on the first page, page 117 at the very bottom, section B, that pretty well spells out the Aiken County Family Y hereby agrees that upon the approval of the referendum, again, that's the key thing, the referendum has to be approved, it shall convey its interest in the land that the indoor swimming pool facility will be built. So the city of Aiken will own the piece of land that this facility would be built on. The city then agrees to lease the property back to Y for 99 years at a rate of $10 a year for these terms and conditions. So for the next 99 years, we're going to own that piece of land, we'll lease it back to them, and as long as the YMCA has a swimming pool there, there should be no problem. Anything else you want to add on that?
That's basically it. These next three follow that form, but we'll be getting the interest in the land itself and leasing it to the agency, and that's basically how these next three work.
Does any obligation accrue to the city from owning the land that they're leasing to the YMCA?
Item number D3, again, indemnifies us from any liability once this pool gets built.
But I mean, if there's an accident, a major catastrophe and so forth, it's our concern is only with the land. Our interest is only with the land and not what's on the land.
Well, not only that, the indemnification, or it's also called a hold harmless clause, they're agreeing that they're going to hold us harmless from anything like that that happens on the property. So that's really the key there.
If it's in order, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move for approval of this Memorandum of Understanding for the Family Y.
I'll second that, Mr.
Okay, we have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
The third one is between the Galaxy, and that would be the major change we have here, is it's entitled Youth Center, and it's really the Galaxy Center. So, but Mr. Jefferson, who has appeared before council in the past, has reviewed this with Ben late this afternoon, and again has no problems with this. And this agreement is almost verbatim the same as the one that you just approved.
And there's a hold harmless clause in this one as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, I move for approval of this memorandum of understanding between the city and the Aiken Youth Center.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Okay.
I have a question.
Sure.
I've just read it quickly. Do they have authority to give us the land? This is land that the YMCA owns, is it not?
Yes, it is. That's my
and we will have to get, again, through the agreement that will be established later on, is, I don't know if it'll be 30 pages, but however long it is, we will have to get title that one portion of the land.
Yeah,
the Y will be built on land they own, and then this portion on the north side, this appendix to the Y, will be land, again, that we own. So we'll own a piece of property where the swimming pool's at, we'll own a piece of property where the teen center's at, and the rest of the property.
Yeah, just at Annex B, I mean, paragraph B on this memorandum is a little bit different. I know we're calling it the Aiken Youth Center, but in essence, it's the YMCA that's got to give us the land.
Correct. That's probably a good point that we'll have to make. The Y will own this land, right? Yeah, okay.
I mean, that's my understanding, and then they have to give it to us.
Yeah, that's
good. We'll lease it back. Okay.
Good.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the change.
Okay.
A motion I assume put in change.
Again, clarification.
Yes, ma'am. Come on up here and ask us. That's Dick.
Like an informed citizen. Okay, one question, and this may be for you, Ben. Okay, and since I haven't been here in Lakeland, the land that we are receiving will be equivalent to or exceed the value of the money that will be done through the 1 cent tax.
That's not the important part of the equation. The important part of the equation. The important part of the equation is making sure the city actually owns the land, whatever the land is, so that the city can control what happens on the land.
So you're buying land, you're paying money for land that's worth.
We're not paying anything for the land.
They're
going to deed us the land for free in return for us giving them the tax money.
Double tax money. But go ahead anyway.
And that's opposed to just giving the money without being conveyed anything.
Right. Okay. Did we have a motion and second on that?
We did.
Okay. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
And let me make, at least in my mind, clarification what Ms. Dix asked. Once the land is in the city and somebody builds a building on that land, and that entity would then go out of, let's say something happened to the teen center 50 years from now, was no longer in existence, then the city would have control as to what happens with that building because on their land. Again, it's for the public purpose or public good. The fourth agreement is with the African American Art, History, and Cultural Center. Again, it's almost verbatim as the other two that you've just approved. It's for the $350,000, and again, with this particular place, would be a 99-year lease at $10 a year in accordance with terms and conditions. Obviously, there's a building on it, so we'd be owning the land underneath the building.
And I'd like to just add, I did speak with Margaret Trebert this afternoon, and she was interested in us putting a clause in there concerning the right to renew after the 99 years expires. So they're very optimistic of a long, lasting relationship.
My only thought on that, quite honestly, is that they would have already received their $350,000 worth of services, and I mean, I don't know why you'd want to go any longer. I mean, the contract would be terminated, and they would, the building would revert to them, and
that's right.
They would press on. I can't see why we would continue to have an interest for $350,000. I wouldn't think it's a lifetime.
Would you bring that up when we get closer to that 99 years?
As long as you're the mayor, I'll be here to do it.
Good, understand your point, though.
Yeah, but I mean, we're only giving $350,000. I mean, there's no telling how much other money they're going to have to spend to get to develop that center for where they want. I think we're going to need to get our money's worth and protect it, but beyond that, I'm not sure we have much of an interest.
Yeah. Yes, would you please come up and...
Hi, I'm Margaret Jaber. I'm on the board with the Aiken Center, and it's my understanding that we're not receiving services. We're receiving funds under the capital improvement. Thanks. The only other addition that Ben and I discussed is the Aiken Corporation owns the land and the building that sits on it. So we would need to have them as a signatory on our any memorandum of understanding and on that 30-page lease that Ben's going to give us 6 days to look at. And I believe that we have an understanding that we can do that easily enough. So it wouldn't be just us on the lease. In terms of renewal, we're just trying to cover all of our bases. We have a board meeting scheduled for May 13th, at which point we will thoroughly go over the memorandum. I'm not coming here with signatures this evening. The Reverend Slaughter is at a revival tonight, and he asked me to come and asked Joanne Sanders to come here tonight in case you had any questions for us. I just enjoy saying that there's a reverend at a revival who asked me to come to take his place. I tried to get Ben to $9.99 a year. Couldn't do it. He's working hard for you. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you, Margaret.
And if I'm getting the impression council may want this just at the end of the lease to land be conveyed to the entity. I don't know if that's something y'all are considering. I mean, you could renew the lease. You could, as you're saying, they've gotten more than our money's worth, and at that point it's time for title to pass to them. But that's something y'all might want to consider.
But is it really our choice? It's Aiken Corporation's property. Do we really get involved in that?
Well, they're going to convey the land to us, so we're going to own it. And at that point, we'll definitely have an interest in it. So we could continue to lease it. We could, after 99 years, or we could convey it to them. Or...
I mean, my only thought in raising the issue, quite frankly, is when you look at the amount of money we're giving to each of the projects, I don't know how much is it going to cost to build that swimming pool, and we're giving, what, $500,000, is it? No, that's the Aiken Center.
$400,000.
Yeah, $400,000, and it's probably going to cost how much to build that swimming pool? I mean, that's a nice-looking pool, probably millions.
I think they estimated maybe $2 million or $1.5 million to $2 million.
I mean, I just think we need to protect taxpayers' money, but have to, I mean, 99 years is a long time to protect that investment. And certainly renewing after 99 years doesn't make any sense to me. That's the only reason.
And my just legal advice is to counsel is it could be done either way, and that's really... Either way is legal and proper. It's more a policy decision. What y'all may think about that.
I mean, do we feel like as a council is 30 years enough, 50 years enough? I mean, 99 seems like a good.
Mr. Mayor?
Wade, would you like to? Sure. Reggie, go ahead.
While he's coming up, I think this would be under the lease agreement. but if some, if once Aiken Corporation, and I'm asking this as a question, once Aiken Corporation goes to the city, then I believe that the Culture Center is setting up a 501(c) so that we would be dealing with that group, which would come up as we do the lease. Is that a true statement, Ben? Because Aiken Corp moves out of this once they give us the building, give us the city the building.
Give us the building.
What? Or is it just the land only?
Yes and no. The Aiken Corporation works with this committee like it does and has done with several other committees and encourages them to get their own 501(c)(3).
Right.
With this process moving forward, it might be a year before the Cultural Center gets its 501(c)(3).
Okay, but that's the intent.
And until that time, Aiken Corporation will be directly involved, working in the decision-making process and handling the funds for that group. Then once they get the 501(c)(3), they're out on their own.
Okay, very good. I just wanted clarification on that.
Right. I just wanted to make council aware that while I've read this memorandum and I've got no problems with it, I don't speak for the corporation until they actually vote and tell me what to do. And that won't take place until the second Wednesday. I don't anticipate any problems, but it'll be the second Wednesday next month before we're in a position to actually sign it.
Okay. Thank you, Wayne.
We have a speaker, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a speaker?
Come sure. On. I'm sorry.
Hey, gentlemen of the council, I'm Pete Siha. I'm confused, and I hope you'll be able to alleviate some of my confusion. The money for the African American Historical Art Center. Who originally owned the property that it sits on now?
You're talking about Bill Franklin, or
who owned the property that the building now sits on prior to the city or the Aiken Development Corporation?
It was Mr. Franklin, wasn't it?
Bill Franklin.
Bill Franklin.
And that was purchased by the city?
No.
How did the Aiken Development Corporation come by that property?
Thank you.
That was one of the projects that the Aiken Corporation came to City Council and requested assistance on. And they provided $360,000 from accommodations tax payable over 5 years. That money was used to buy the building.
And it was how much again?
$360,000.
Thank you very much. So in effect, taxpayers' dollars through the city paid for that property, correct? Okay. When the project started, my understanding was that that was a project that was going to be funded privately. Is that correct? Is that?
Well, in part.
In part?
But no, not totally.
Okay. To date, how much money has the city donated toward the center?
$360,000.
That's excluding the property that the Aiken Development Corporation gave them?
That is the money that they gave them for the property.
So no other city monies except for the property have gone to...
I'm not aware of any.
That project?
I don't think so.
Not to my knowledge.
No.
In 2004, the question came up on the local option sales tax on whether or not to put this project under the one-cent sales tax. It was decided at that time to use the tourism dollars that we get in from hotel stays to provide $360,000 to the center and $250,000 to assist with the railroad depot. And those monies were paid off in 2009.
Okay. So to date, the only city funding comes in form of the land at $360,000. Is that correct?
The land and the building was there.
Okay.
But there's also, is there not, you can clarify this, there was a parking lot that was purchased that was going to be a park, but in essence, will it not serve as a parking lot for the African-American?
No. The answer is no.
That's separate.
That's completely separate. So there'll be nothing to do between the African-American Center and that parking lot? Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, and so the only additional funding that we're speaking of is the current $350,000 that the council approved at its last meeting?
To my knowledge, it is. Does anybody else have any other? Wade? The only money the city has provided so far is the $360,000.
Right. In addition to that, we've raised over $1 million that's been used to rehabilitate
right.
Historic buildings.
Yeah, that building was in terrible shape when they took over.
Okay. So in total, the city and the taxpayers will be funding $710,000, in effect, for that project.
If you consider the accommodation tax is being paid by taxpayers.
Yes, sir. I believe that is taxpayers' money.
Not our taxpayers.
I beg your pardon?
It's accommodations tax. So it's people staying in our motels, visitors coming in, staying at hotels, motels. That's the money that went to help. To pay that $360,000.
Oh, I understand. Okay, fine. That was part of what was confusing me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So that wasn't Aiken County or South Carolina taxpayers. That was guests and visitors and tourists.
Not unless you stayed at a motel, maybe, or something. You know.
Okay.
Certainly, it was somebody's tax money. There's no doubt about that. But it was not Aiken County or the city of Aiken money.
Okay, that's what I needed to know. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. Anything else on this one? Do we have a motion and a second?
Let me just clarify this then. That the major change that we need to make here is that Aiken Corporation owns the land, so that'll have to be incorporated within this agreement in some manner. What's going to be done with this one and the other ones is by council approving it, we will then be able to give it to each one of the entities for their formal signature and approval. Now, if let's just say that Aiken Corporation a couple weeks from now comes back and says, we don't like the form it's in, we don't want to sign it, then we would be bringing back that agreement back to city council. But hopefully, in all four entities, we will not have to do so. So other than that one change, I believe this agreement is fine, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All right. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I just have one unresolved issue, and that has to do with the extra 99 years on the lease. Are we going to just forget about that and just pass this like it is?
Yes.
Isn't that the smartest thing to do?
What does it bother us? How does it bother us that that's there?
It doesn't
What's
bother
the extent
me.
Of a bother here?
None.
Now, if it's recommended that from when it comes back to something else, then we can talk about it and have that in our final negotiation.
I just want to know how to say the motion.
Oh, okay.
That's all.
If you had passed the way it is now, we could take the issue off later this year or next year when it comes back for the formal agreement with the actual lease.
Okay. All right, I'm going to move that we approve the memorandum of understanding for this one as is written. And
I second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Thank you, Ben. Okay, under new business, first item is the first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding portable signs in the downtown business zone. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by its title. This is an ordinance amending the zoning ordinance regarding portable signs in the downtown business zone. This came before City Council several years ago. We were looking at the newspaper boxes. We were looking at other signage. We were looking at portable signs. We were looking at kiosks. And we were looking at parking. you know, and several of those have come back before you. And this is, we looked at sidewalk sales, was also, it seems like, a number of issues with the downtown. So we are trying to take those in priority. And in this particular case, the portable signs is an item that the downtown merchants got together, discussed very thoroughly, looked at the pros and the cons and sizes and distance from the building, and then brought this forward to the Planning Commission, who in turn discussed this for several months. And before you tonight is the wording and the ordinance as to what they all have developed. And if you look on page 152, it basically gives, in essence, the various changes that they would like to see. So I'm just going to read some of these items here for purposes of getting in the minutes. For each business in downtown DB zone, one portable sign may be located either on the lot on which the building is located or the public sidewalk immediately in front of the building in which the building is located. One, when placed on the public sidewalk, no part of the sign shall be further than 28 inches from the exterior wall of the building. Obviously, that's so it doesn't become a tripping hazard. Two, the sign must be freestanding, not attached to another structure or have attachments. Be limited to two sides, no taller than 4 feet, including legs, no wider than 2 feet, and no more than 6 square feet in area. It's got to contain the name of the business, be heavy enough so that it's not going to be blown over, and it cannot be illuminated. Number three, the width of the open walking space of the sidewalk shall be at least 4 feet, and no exit discharge from any doorway shall be obstructed in violation of the International Fire Code. Four, that all signs must be brought inside at night. So this is the ordinance that has been worked out with the Planning Commission, the downtown merchants. It was unanimously approved by the Planning Commission at their last meeting, and so for your consideration tonight, this is the zoning ordinance which applies to portable signs on sidewalks in the downtown area with some changes that were approved by the Planning Commission. I do want to say that originally it came to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission had originally intended it to be 10 square feet in size. After a citizen spoke at that meeting, they reduced it down to 6 square feet. And ADDA at this point in time feels comfortable. A lot of changes here. And like with everything, when you pass an ordinance of this nature, City Council can re-review this 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, if it's not working or if some changes need to be made. But we felt like this was a great attempt by both the Planning Commission and the downtown merchants to come up with portable signs within the DB area.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir. Sure.
Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
I noticed the signs are limited to 4 feet in height and 2 feet wide, yet the total square area is 6 square feet.
That means that some signs might only be 3 feet by 1.5 feet, or some could be taller. And so, in other words, 1.5 by 4, I believe, equals 6 square feet. Mm-hmm. So, if it's going to be 4 feet high, it's got to be 1.5 feet wide. If it's going to be 2 feet wide, then it can only be 3 feet tall. So, again, it's the square footage of the entire sign is what we'll be looking at.
Okay. All right. I'd like to ask, caller, could you come up here a minute, and I just want to ask a question. I guess I've tried to visualize this in my own, through my own eyes, as maybe potentially at least every business has one of these signs out there every day. I'm sure y'all talked about this.
We did, and I think that, you know, that's a fear that everyone has, but it's just like when we approved the 2 feet for being able to put items on the sidewalk.
Right.
That was the
right
concern, is everybody's going to have stuff on the sidewalk. And I think, you know, common sense says that's not going to happen. If it does, we can come back and say we're nixing it. But I think that's just kind of a preconceived fear that really is not justified.
Yeah, well, that's good. I support it. I support anything we can do to help our businesses. There's no doubt about
this.
And I know we all feel that. We all feel that way. But it's just something that I've had on my mind ever since I saw this coming to us, and just trying to visualize looking down the street and all these signs And now maybe everyone won't have a sign out every day.
And they won't. And there are some businesses who don't want signs out either. I mean, this is not 100%. We can never get 100% agreement on anything. We try to go with what the majority wants. So there are some businesses who will never put a sign out.
Right.
But right now we felt like with what was out there that there needed to be some regulation to make it more. A lot of people like it. They feel like that's part of the ambiance of downtown.
Yeah, right. I don't disagree at all. Okay. Well, I just wanted to clear my thinking on that.
Yes, sir.
With you. Okay. Thank you. Any other comments while callers is up here?
I vaguely remember people were talking about signs coming parallel to the awnings and so forth. Does that affect this, or is this a totally separate issue from that?
Parallel to the
awnings. It really is. I think what you're talking about, there was some discussion at one point when we were going through this with the Planning Commission about signs that could hang from the awning and even without an awning. I think the ordinance reads right now that you have to have an awning. Mm-hmm. But our contention is this was not about telling the name of a store. Statistics will tell you that if you go a certain amount, like I forget if it's 30 feet, 100 feet, and there's nothing there, a business is closed or whatever, that people will stop and they'll turn around. And that happens especially in the evening when we have late stores that do stay open late. If they come to a park where there's a real estate shop that has frontage and they're closed, several of our businesses will lose out on night traffic because people will get to that point, not know they're open, they'll turn around and go back or they'll go across the street. This is a sign that is able to put on the sidewalk in front of their store that says, "I'm still open. Come down here and visit me."
Okay.
Okay. Very
animation.
Very, very good. Yeah, I like that. That adds a lot to it. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate what y'all do too for our downtown. Okay. Do we have a motion and a second? This is a first reading.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I so move that we approve this as stated.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second. Any other discussion issues? If not, show hands, please. All in favor. Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 2 is approval of Planning Commission action agenda. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Last Tuesday, City Council met with the Planning Commission and discussed the items that you have before you, which are in the form of an action agenda. If Council approves the action agenda as presented, some of these items will be starting because they're already in motion prior to the July 1, but this is really their July 1 through June 30th next year action agenda. Typically, you'd probably find them to get through at least half or more of these items, depending on what complications, or if Council adds any items, which we typically see two or three items added during the fiscal year. You were given tonight, a couple of you had asked about the inoperable vehicles in a commercial location. So I did give you some information on that tonight concerning the ordinance that is currently involved and some of the locations that would be involved as we get ready to look at this particular item. So we are asking City Council's consideration of approval of the attached action agenda for the Planning Commission's fiscal year 2010-2011.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion? Second.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve the proposed action agenda as discussed in the joint meeting of City Council and the Planning Commission.
Okay. I'll second it. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3, approval of bus shelters. Excuse me, Mr. LeDuc.
As Council is well aware, the Best Friends Express, which is operated out of the Lower Savannah Council of Governments, provides a bus service throughout our county for individuals needing this form of transportation. Right now, there are very few bus shelters located in Aiken County. I do know they have one at Aiken Tech, and we have been discussing staff the possibility of adding some more bus shelters for those citizens that use this form of transportation. We have talked to the hospital about locating one within their complex, and we have given you an approximate location where that would be at. We have also talked to the Aiken Housing Authority up on Han Village, which is right on Highway 19, And they would be very appreciative of having a shelter there. Both organizations have stated that they would go ahead and provide some form of maintenance. The Lower Savannah Council of Government will provide any liability that would go along the structure. And they have a grant to buy the structure. They're only asking the City of Aiken to install the structure. Since this is the first time that we've ever done this, we wanted to pick out a couple locations that we feel would be used, and are one of the two of the top five locations in the city where we have the most ridership. If this works out, then there's a possibility that if more grants are available, that council could consider other locations. But for tonight, we'd like to recommend the approval of two bus shelters, with the city installing them, one to be located at the Aiken Regional Hospital, the other at South Carolina 19 near Han Village. I know we have representatives here with the Council of Government and staff members that if you have any questions concerning these bus shelters, they'd be more than willing to answer those questions.
Okay, who's here representing?
Linda Basham.
Okay. Oh, Linda.
Linda Basham.
Hello. You've had a long meeting, and I don't think we need to belabor this. Roger, you did a great job with your remarks. Our system, the Best Friend Express system, is what we call a flag down system. So we don't really have a lot of bus stops like you do in an urban setting. People can flag down the vehicle any safe place along the route and get on. But it's really nice for a lot of the people who use and count on the public transit system to have a place that's out of the weather, out of the elements, and a place to sit down while they wait, because some of our passengers do have disabilities, some are seniors, and a lot of them are people who use it to get to work every day or to educational classes at Aiken Tech or the USC Aiken. A lot of them, you know, work at the hospital. Some people go to the hospital to visit people. So it's just a nice consideration to be able to provide a shelter. And I think in your handout, Roger, did you have the pictures? It's a really nice looking, no advertisement, just a nice looking structure that provides a nice amenity for the passengers.
Right. Linda, we're looking at two pictures here. Are either of those pictures what you would propose?
Yes, there are a number of really attractive styles. We've been working with Sandra Korbelik, and, you know, trying to think what would be something that would fit in well. There are other styles. There's some that, you know, have more of a tin roof or metal roof look that they call a historic style structure. We did think that it would be nice to have it enclosed as much as possible, you know, to protect people from the elements. But these are just examples. You all, you know, can have a voice in selecting what you think looks nice. And certainly, I think the hospital and Han Village, you know, didn't seem to be concerned too much about that. So I think everybody's pretty agreeable about what it's going to look like.
Okay. But we will have an opportunity to voice our opinion.
Okay. And Mr. Mayor, excuse me, for the record, Ms. Price advises that she's a member of the Lower Savannah Council of Government's board, and after having listened to her city attorney this evening, she has recused herself from these discussions. She's left the room, and she's filling out her conflict of interest statement.
And aren't you proud?
I am, actually. Thank you. It's good to be listened to. It's good to be listened to.
Okay. All right.
I got a quick question. You said there's not going to be any commercial advertisements. Can the city use it for public service announcements?
You know, there's probably an option to get something that does have a way that you can display a poster or informational material. We can certainly check into that. We probably would want to in some way mark it with the Best Friend Express, just the logo, so that people would realize that was the place to catch the bus. But we can certainly look into that. It would be a service to the public to be able to get the information out.
I agree. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Good point.
Okay.
All right.
So tonight, you want us to vote on, I guess we need to vote to go ahead, but we still need to look, you know, at the final version.
However you want to do it, it's fine with us. We're just happy to be able to get the shelters out there.
Okay. Shall we? How about a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Linda. Thank you. Okay. We're very fortunate to have a special presenter here today, and I'm going to ask Councilmember DeWall if he would like to introduce our presenter.
I certainly will, and I'm very pleased to do so. Many of us remember Ashley Landis when she came to Agin last year to compliment us being among the leaders in the state on transparency. And I think that she represents the South Carolina Policy Council. She's a director of the South Carolina Policy Council, and they have done wonderful work working around the state, helping taxpayers identify issues that need to be addressed. Tonight she is going to report on the results of her review of our budget, and I think knowing that there are some business leaders in the audience, we may generate into a little discussion on business license fees. So, Ms. Landis, welcome to the City of Agin again.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dick, and thank you all.
Yes, let us welcome you, too.
Thank you.
Now, one thing let me say up front here, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You've got a lot of information here, and I'm sure it's a lot of good information. However, we haven't had a chance to go over it since we just got it this afternoon late. Some of us maybe not even seen it till we got to the meeting. So what we are basically going to do, as far as I'm concerned, is try to answer some things if we can write off. If others, we will take this information so that we can do our own research.
Sure.
And get back to you.
Sure, fair enough. And I'll tell you what we'll do tonight. First of all, thank you all so much for letting me come and talk to you. I very much appreciate it. And I do want to commend you all again for your lead in transparency. And you guys did the right thing there, and we appreciate that, and so do the taxpayers. It's nice to set an example, and it's nice to have local government officials setting an example, and it's nice to be able to brag about that all over the state. I know it's been a long night, and so I'm not going to keep everybody here too much longer because it is, wow, 9:15. And we have passed out a lot of information. We got a lot of charts. We got a lot of facts and figures. That's what we do at the South Carolina Policy Council. Our job is to be a research organization, independent voice. So for those of you who may not know who we are the think tank. We are devoted to promoting limited government, free enterprise, and individual liberty and responsibility. So we do have that perspective up front, and I want to say that there's no secret about what the Policy Council stands for. We believe the free market is the best engine of economic development and prosperity, period. We believe that. And understood that not everyone does, and I think there are a lot of folks with different ideas about that. Certainly in Columbia, Chairman of the Senate Finance Committee made it pretty clear he doesn't think the free market is the answer to the situation in our state. But tonight, what we want to do, I'll tell you what, fair enough, Fred, we're not going to, Mr. Mayor, ask you to go through a lot of exhaustive charts. We'd like you all to take some time to look at that and to ask questions. So if I could maybe just give you a little bit of a general overview of some of the things that we've discovered, because our goal here tonight is really just to make you all aware of some information, some general information, and a couple of things that we've looked at, and just sort of the state of the economy in South Carolina. And by the state of the economy, I know you all have probably heard, and a lot of folks here too, that government's kind of on the downswing and there's not a lot of money for services. And do you guys even need this? Do we need this? Can you hear me pretty well? Yeah, that's what I thought. No one's ever said, Ashley, you know, you're talking too quietly. That's not a danger. But you know, actually, in Columbia, spending is up. And by the way, the state budget has pretty much increased or come close to increasing every year. And when we talk about where that money's coming from, in large part, it is on the backs of small independent businesses in South Carolina. And that's who's paying the bill for increased spending. Now, I know the general fund is down in Columbia, but you know what? There's another category of spending in our state, and it's called the other funds. And the reason I talk a little about the state economy is because we want you kind of to consider some of the things that you all could do to ease the burden on businesses in your city. Business in South Carolina is taking an incredible hit. Think about what just happened in the legislature with the Employment Securities Commission. It was a pretty big mess up by our state legislature. The cost will be to South Carolina businesses. They will impose that cost and maybe already have. The health care plan coming down out of D.C., nobody denies that's going to result in increased costs for small independent businesses. It will. It absolutely will. So what are we doing in South Carolina? And in looking at kind of the spending picture and recognizing that we have to have these discussions, these are not easy talks, and we know that. It's not an easy thing to come before you and say, guys, you're kind of spending a lot of money, maybe a little bit more than you think you are, both at the state level and the local level. And it isn't just in Aiken, it's all over our state. And the conversation that we have to have is, what do we want government to do for us? And in these times, and it is tough, and we recognize a lot of good intentions to develop the economy by government officials. But what we want to tell you is, that's not working very well. And we know that because we brought in some economists, South Carolina economists and some national economists, to examine our state, to look at our economy, and try to answer the question, why is South Carolina still one of the poorest states in the country? And we are. And I think the answer was pretty interesting. You know, the comparison of government spending in South Carolina to the private sector output, you got a differential of about 58%. And here's what that means in real terms. Government spending getting higher percentage-wise than your private sector output. And whatever anyone believes about that, there's no question that every dollar, right, to government is coming from the private sector. There is nowhere else to get it. There's nowhere else to get it. Economists have expressed a great deal of concern about these trends. And with spending on the increase up, the other funds category in Columbia is up by around $2.1 billion since 2003. That's a lot of extra money going into state government, and that's coming from fees and fines and costs imposed on businesses without raising general taxes. But those are tax increases nonetheless to businesses. And here in Aiken, and I just wanted to sort of give you a quick snapshot of what we see, and hope that you understand this is in the spirit of a discussion about what you all want and about what we can do to answer the question, where do we want to take the money from and where do we want to spend it? In Aiken, and these figures are 2003 to 2009, government spending has grown by 43%. That's a pretty big increase. Now, again, you're to be forgiven for not maybe recognizing that. Times have been good, and frankly, the folks up in Columbia aren't doing a very good job of communicating that, you know, we need to cut spending. In fact, they're increasing it dramatically as well. Your general government category, and that's something I think we'd like to talk about, maybe if you could help us understand your categories of spending a little better, because as best we can tell, that doesn't include law enforcement. Doesn't include your public sanitation, doesn't include public works and some of the things that you would think core services would be funded by some of these dollars, but that doesn't appear to include that. And that category seems to be up by about 146%. Your revenue from business license tax, and we talked about this a little earlier, and that's not, by the way, I think, including the larger money from SCNG and some of those other folks, is 52% increase in that same year. Population increase looks to be only around 12%, but the government employee increase appears to be around 17% for the same period. Economic development spending in Aiken is up by 170%. There's been a huge increase in spending on developing the economy. And I think what we have to ask at every level of government and have a fair, honest debate among ourselves, is that paying off? And certainly at the state level, the economists say no. Not only is it not paying off to invest all of this money in government spending, but it is very much and quite dramatically hurting your private sector. In Aiken, you have an 18.1% unemployment rate, vacillating between around 16 and 18%. The unemployment rate in South Carolina, just to give you a little perspective, is at 12%, which makes us the fourth highest in the nation, by the way. And that is a city figure rather than a county figure, too, because we looked at that, too. I think the county unemployment rate in Aiken is around 10%.
Excuse me.
Sure.
Can you repeat that for Aiken? For the city of Aiken is 18%?
18%. 17, 18%. Is that right, Jeff? Okay, so 16 was the last figure you found? 16? Okay. 18%, I think, was one of the most recent months we looked at. But yes, 16%. The unemployment rate in South Carolina is 12%. And again, that's the fourth highest in the nation. Fourth highest in the nation. And the per capita income is under the state average as well, at around $28,000. And also South Carolina as a state, we are the fifth poorest in the nation, fifth lowest per capita income in the country. So at the state level, at the local level, we see huge increases in economic development spending, huge investments on the part of government in growing the economy, generating prosperity, creating jobs, and we see absolutely no payoff at all. Certainly at the state level, that's over a 20-year period, there has been no significant change. But at the state level, you've gone from $34 million in incentives in 1994 to over half a billion in 2009. And we have the fourth highest unemployment rate in the nation and the fifth lowest per capita income. So that's where we are. And I think, you know, I think that these can be tough discussions if you take it in the spirit of, well, we're doing everything wrong. I think instead what we have to look at is what's right. Because I do believe that everybody here in this city, you all live here. This is your city. I have no doubt that you want businesses to succeed. Again, business doesn't succeed. You don't have a successful, vibrant city. So if that's the case, what can we do? And one of the answers is you can be first. You can take the lead, and you can eliminate the business license tax in this city. You can do it. You could do that. And if you did, you would generate that prosperity, the job growth, the income growth, because you would have the private sector able to invest those dollars. And that's a pretty simple formula. And I think it comes down to kind of what some of us out there are hearing about how we choose to spend dollars. And I know that there are a lot of worthy projects out here, but I just kind of want to give you sort of a snapshot of what we heard and ask again if there's room for a discussion in ways that you all, because we are very anxious to look to a city to take the lead on this and to eliminate a tax that, by the way, is on the revenue to the business, not even the profit. Well, this is a terrible tax that you impose on businesses. And frankly, it's not helping your economy at all. And discussions like, you know, tonight, for example, you raised a fee tonight. Right here, you raised the fee on water. And I understand fee for service, but then I hear you say, well, but consumption is down. But we have to pay for some of these other projects. Sewer, absolutely, fair enough. A core government function, to be sure. But then, on the other side, we kind of hear that we need $500,000 to build a swimming pool. Sort of in the same meeting, right? And so I think it's fair to pull back a little and ask, what are our priorities? What is really, really critical to fund right now? Because the private sector in this state, and this is our message to folks all over the place, the private sector in South Carolina is in a great deal of trouble. And I'm certain that you all wouldn't dispute that we have some serious problems in our economy right now, and we are losing jobs. 90,000 South Carolina jobs from August 2008 to August 2009. 90,000 South Carolina jobs were lost. Some of the most ambitious government-driven economic development plans in Colombia, at least that we've heard announced, might create 3,000 new jobs, by their estimation. But the cost is enormous, and we simply can't afford to do that. And I guess what we would say, at least maybe, would you have the discussion about letting the private sector drive the economy? Would you consider going in and cutting out your economic development spending in favor of allowing businesses their economic development spending? Because that's where you're going to see prosperity in the city of Aiken, and that's pretty clear and pretty well proven, and not just by the economists. Frankly, I think historically, it's pretty tough to find a successful economy in the world that has been driven by the government. It just has failed. And, you know, I know that sometimes folks roll their eyes at discussions of American free market capitalism, but I do want to say that I believe Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, all across the state, when we ask citizens, who do you think ought to make these decisions? A few elected officials or you? It's pretty universal, and I think as Americans we believe that, but I also think that more than a philosophical discussion, what we want to communicate, closing, is we have numbers for you. And we do hope that you all will consider the enormous cost to raising government spending and to showing that there has been no discernible impact on job growth or income growth with increased government spending. That has not happened in this state, and it doesn't appear to have happened in your city. So if it's not working, can we try something different? Can we go back to a lot more money in the private sector and maybe a little less in the public sector? And so that's really what we came to talk about, and I want to offer absolutely any time to sit down with any of you to answer your questions, to sort of show you these numbers, to make it clear that we aren't here to criticize you. We really are here to offer this information, knowing that you may not have heard it before, and hoping that you will reach out to us and give us an opportunity to show you even more what tax cuts can do. And better still, we would love for you guys to go first. Cut a tax for your business, put the money back in the private sector, and let's see how many more jobs can be created in the city of Aiken. Because I bet if you did that, I could come back here next year and give you some better news than I did tonight. Thank you, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
Ashley, you know that we are always open to talk. We've already met with you.
Right, and appreciate that very much.
Time ago, and we invited further conversations.
Indeed.
But there's a lot of information here that this is one way right now. You need to understand exactly what we're doing, too.
Sure, and we want to.
Some of the things may not apply. Every city, every town's different. We know that. You know that.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And we've got a lot of good things going that is in economic development. And we're not going to get into it now because we'd be here another couple hours. But we'd be very happy to continue mm-hmm. our discussion with you on this. But you've got to keep in mind several things as well. We haven't raised our property taxes in 21 years, and we don't look like we're going to raise it again. Now, our business tax is about, Roger says, 98% lower than the rest of the cities that we compare with. I like to use 90% just to be safe. And so we've got a lot of good things going for our business people, and I hope they understand that. So we'll talk more. How's that?
I'm delighted anytime. Always our pleasure. That's what we're here for.
Okay. Well, let's get together some other time.
Yeah, I appreciate what you've done. Quite often we put our budget together, and sometimes it's based on what we've done last year, what we've done in the past, and it looks like mm-hmm. it works. But I think you've shed some interesting light. As you know from our discussions, there's a question mm-hmm. of how real the numbers are, especially in the area of economic development. I would just appreciate your backup figures, because when I look at the budget, sure. I don't always see economic development.
Understood.
And when you mention the figure of economic development, FY08, of $1,346,510, mm-hmm. It tends to wake me up. I think you made a...
I could tell you what that was for,
okay.
if you like.
Yes.
Okay, in economic development this past year was listed a number of $1,346,510. It all came from the local option sales tax or the accommodation tax. $290,000 came from the money we get from the state for a tax for advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For tourism. So $290,000. Mm-hmm. $745,000 went for USC Aiken for the widening of the road, the parking lot, landscaping for the Convocation Center. $170,000 went to Pine Log, and $175,000 was the last payments we made to the Railroad Depot and the African American Arts, Cultural, and History Center. That adds up to $1,300,000+. So that's it. When we say economic development, it's the once in sales tax and the accommodation tax money.
Yeah, well, it raises an interesting question, because mm-hmm. I think you tried to tie economic development money into jobs and growth.
Mm-hmm. Sure. But, and again, I would say this, in large part, that's us analyzing, really, what the stated purpose of economic development spending is, and that is to increase jobs and to increase income levels. That's the stated purpose of the spending on that, right? And the question has to be, is it working? We have to ask that question, I think, at this point, all of us together,
you need
right?
You need to go beyond that, really, because the implication is, and I love these kinds of discussions, the implication is that our budget represents this $1.3 million in economic development, and that's not really the case. The voters voted for the local option sales tax if the bulk of that money was in there. The accommodations tax money, I agree, is taxpayer money. We've sure. discussed that several times, and that comes from the state. I guess when I look at our budget, what we agree to spend economic development, I'm not sure that we have a lot in there. Certainly working on roads, I'm not sure that's... I guess the important thing is the definition of economic development.
Right. No, right. And I think that's a very good question. I think there has been some advertising spending. Yeah. Economic development since 2003 from $332,000 to $899,000. Those are just the numbers that we have. Lots of increases in staff for economic development and increases in advertising, $80,000 on advertising. And I also see that you all have done a great deal on kind of buying and revamping housing, and we've talked a little bit about that. And again, understanding that the intentions, certainly not arguing with the intentions here, questioning though whether or not in times like this, when your private sector's in trouble and when businesses are being forced to lay off staff, and they certainly are, and when they are being forced to cut their advertising budgets, and they certainly are, and forced to cut any expansion of their businesses, any capital investments in their businesses, all of those things are being cut dramatically in the private sector, including employees. But we don't see that corresponding cut for employees in state and local governments. In fact, we see some increasing in your staff for economic development. And do we understand exactly where all that money's coming from? No. But I think the larger question has to be, should we be appropriating resources right now to those things? And has it worked? Has that spending helped with it, with job growth? And I think we might be having a very different discussion if South Carolina were standing out from the crowd, or if really any city that had invested was doing really, really well economically. But across the state, we simply don't see that. And by the way, that's not just a few years, maybe when you folks have held office, but pretty far back. You can go back 20 years and see the beginning of this kind of trend. And you simply have seen no corresponding increase in job growth or income levels. So I think the question has to be, and I know that a lot of projects are worthy of defense, but out there and where we sit and from where the economists sit, sometimes it really does come down to, in a time like this, do you fund a swimming pool or do you cut a tax? It does come down to those questions. And I think for people across the state, it does. And again, for the economists, it has come down to that. What is the choice in South Carolina right now? Because here's what they suggest. They suggest that we cut taxes, that we give money back to the private sector and do it quickly. And I think, too, you kind of see that echoed, at least philosophically, in D.C., where it's quick economic stimulus money, right? Let's get some money in the economy. We simply don't agree that government ought to be the one deciding that. The private sector certainly knows better how to stimulate the economy and create jobs. And, I mean, there can be some fundamental disagreement among some folks about that. But we're looking at numbers at this point. We're looking at numbers, and we're not seeing any corresponding benefit to the heavy economic development spending at all. It hasn't worked. And I think it's fair for us to all say maybe we thought it would, but it doesn't appear to have.
I just want to make sure I'm hearing you correctly. You're saying that based on your information, there has been no job growth in Aiken, the city of Aiken, or Aiken County.
We're saying your unemployment rate is going up.
I thought I heard you say there's been no.
By the way, we just were able to get off of the Aiken Standard, I think. What is it, Gary?
It's since the counties with the lowest unemployment rates were Aiken and Lexington at 8.5%.
And that's your county, those are your county numbers, right? Yeah, the last number we saw was 10% for your county. And the city is much higher, though. Your city unemployment rate's much higher.
I just have one question, and I guess it's more or less for Roger, or maybe you can answer it if you can. And it has to do with the accommodations tax. The monies that come back to us from the state for accommodations tax, it's my understanding that it has to be spent.
We have no choice.
For advertising. We have no choice in that. They send it back to us for advertising.
And I think some of that's true. There's no question.
Is it not all true?
No question. I think some of that is true. And we're not saying the state does not send you public dollars and tell you spend this on economic development. What I think we're saying to you all is it's not working. And if you in Aiken were to make the choice to cut the tax burden on your businesses in your city, you would see a payoff in a way that the state has not been able to generate by spending public dollars. You could do that. And there are some things you can control at your city level. For example, creating programs in the first place that need state dollars and that draw those dollars down. I mean, let's say you build a museum with state money. You still got to maintain that museum, and that a lot of times comes out of your pocket. So when you create a program with state dollars, a lot of times you end up funding it with your local dollars. And that may not be part of the deal that everybody understands going into it. But again, back to what we're looking at, what is the larger burden on your businesses in your city right now? What is the larger burden?
But let me ask you a question. I hear your message. I understand and I agree with you. We should lower taxes if possible, or keep it in
good
the...
Good for you.
However, do you have any examples of any communities, counties, cities in South Carolina that took your message to heart, acted on it, and did they have any kind of a significant increase in employment?
That's a great question.
It's
a good question. We are just starting to recognize the data, and we released Unleashing Capitalism, which was the first comprehensive analysis like this of what state spending was doing to the economy, and that was in November. So we've just kind of started analyzing the budget. As a matter of fact, I'll give you an example. Last year, we released a report showing the state budget was $21 billion, because it is. More than a third of that is coming from fees and fines on businesses. You know that most legislators had no idea that they voted on a state budget that was $21 billion? Many of them, and these are bright, responsible people, thought the state budget was about $7 billion. So I guess in answer to your question, I think we're all just starting to understand how much government spending is taking place at all levels of government in our state. We're just starting to see the impact, and we're just starting to ask the question that, frankly, perhaps we should have asked when times were good, right? How this is all working out. But you know what? We didn't.
Well, when do you think you'll get any feedback in your studies that would actually prove your point?
How would you like to go first?
Philosophically, your
prove
point
it,
is,
first.
It should be good, but when do you think you'll be able to come in and say...
Let me answer this. I think we can ask the question pretty broadly. When we look at other countries historically and ask, have they been successful when the government has driven the economy? Have those countries been, economic successes? And I can't think of an example of a thriving economic powerhouse where the government is driven, has driven the economy successfully. So I think we already know that doesn't work. I think we already know that doesn't work. And I think what you're asking is it good for the economy to cut taxes and to shrink government? No question. No question it is. Absolutely. Delaware, most free market state in the nation. You guys sense a lot of bills up to Delaware? A lot of corporations up in Delaware. West Virginia, you can look around West Virginia and see, if you take an aerial view, they're probably 50th in the nation in terms of economic freedom. And all the lights of all the energy and all of the corporations and all of the thriving activity is right around the border of West Virginia, because those companies are located outside that state. So I think, is there evidence? Yes. And do we have it? Sure. Have we cut much spending in South Carolina over the last 20 years? Not really. We really haven't done much to cut spending and to put money back in the private sector economy. And I think you're seeing the results of that. And what we're saying is we've got to start doing that. Or this isn't going to get any better. It's simply not going to get any better.
Well, I think we've got 400-some-odd employees working for the city. We certainly are not advocating increasing drastically the number of city employees. You know, so most of the employees, most of the work is provided by private industries. I don't see where the city council is driving or trying to get the government to drive business growth. I don't get the connection.
Well, I think that's a question of when you continue to raise taxes and fund projects through the city instead of allowing the private sector, such as maybe developing housing in your city, that's a job best left to. And I don't know what your Aiken Corporation is, though I'm quite intrigued by it. But that doesn't sound like a private sector company to me. And I think you've got an awful lot of business taking place in that company and a whole lot of dollars being invested there to sort of buy up land and generate and fund charities and those kinds of things. And I think, again, our question back is, how's that working out? And I wish that I could say, well, I'm not sure that I wish it, but I would concede it. I would concede the point.
Yeah.
If growth in government spending showed a big corresponding increase in prosperity for South Carolinians, but it doesn't, the opposite is pretty clearly true, and that's what we see. So, again, we're always available to take questions. I know you guys have had a long night.
I just have one question for you, Ashley.
Sure.
When I was coming in, there was a gentleman looking for the meeting to talk about business owners and their taxes, and mm-hmm. I was not sure what he was asking about, but now it's clear to me that maybe he was asked to come to hear your presentation. But looking at the information that you've given here, it doesn't seem like we're that much out of line with our business taxes and
with the rest of the state, you mean?
Yes.
Probably not.
And some of these numbers are not.
And the numbers that you've given
right
us.
Either.
Right. Probably not. And again, we aren't here suggesting you guys are so, you're taxing your businesses so much more than other places. What we're saying is if you taxed your businesses less, you have a whole lot more of them in Aiken. And it seems to me that that's your goal, isn't it? To create more of a prosperous city. And doing that through the private sector is much more of a guarantee of success if you create good conditions. If you cut your taxes, here's what happens. Where do you think a business is going to want to locate? If they're given some choices and they don't have to pay as high a tax here in Aiken versus maybe 50 miles away, boy, I tell you what, you want to come to Columbia versus Aiken? I think that's a heck of an incentive to come here. And I think you would see that happening more. And I think you would see businesses coming into your city if you lower taxes. Whereas, I mean, just as an example, you know, I'm talking to someone who's a wedding photographer, and this person saying, I would love to expand my business. I'd like to go work in other cities and counties, but I have to pay a business license tax every single time I walk in and take a picture across city lines. Is that encouraging growth? Is that encouraging entrepreneurship or job creation?
Now, do you have the figures for the town of Edgefield?
Don't. I mean, I'm sure we can get those. We'd be happy to.
Have you looked at our rates compared to others in the city?
I don't know if we have those specifically. Maybe we have, yes, Jeff?
Well, we've got
the answer is maybe we could get that information to you. Because
you'll see that we're very low.
Maybe that's true, but here's what I will tell you. Other cities are looking at ways to reduce the tax burden.
And we will always do that as well.
And I think that's
good. Are you aware of the Ways and Means looking at the funds for the cities and their 12% cut that they're looking
at? Right. Mm-hmm.
And we had a cut last year.
Right.
So saying to you is that we have a lot of cuts in our budget over the last few years. And we've got low business taxes. We haven't had a property tax increase in 21 years. Now, does that make sense?
You know, Mr. Mayor, I think, though, when you kind of pull back and say, but we've increased, you know, we're looking at local option sales tax, we do impose a business license tax, and we raise fees and fines, right? I mean, those count as taxes, I guess is what I'm saying. When you raise costs for water, that counts as a tax increase to some degree.
We did our best not to raise the taxes, and that's why the weather didn't help us any, right? So we got to the point we have to. Do you understand all those taxes that we're having to accept, all those increases that we're having to accept? I know what you're saying.
Yes,
I wish we could do away with all taxes.
Really?
Yes. But we can't. And we can't have a lovely city and a quality of life either that our citizens like.
You know,
I've never heard anyone come to me and say, you know, this is a terrible city we live in. I don't like the quality of life. I'm going to move out. It's always to the contrary. At least once or twice a week, people will tell us they moved here because of our low taxes. They love our community. They love the ambiance that we have. They love the people that we have. So, as far as I'm concerned, as long as I'm mayor, we'll continue to keep the taxes low. For ways we can lower them lower.
Well, there you go. And I think the fact that you've
said that to you before.
Right, and you have, which is one of the reasons that we are here to say, take that first step. Take that first step and eliminate a tax.
We'll take a first step to get together with you and talk about this so that you thoroughly understand our budget and what we're doing. Some of these numbers are not correct.
And I would look forward to you telling us where our numbers are not right. I certainly always am interested in hearing that, because we have put together, just again, as a snapshot of what we see in terms of increased spending. 43% in government spending seems like a pretty high number.
You've got to understand what that's made up of and where it comes from.
Actually, I just want to thank you for your information and your enthusiasm and passion for what you're doing here. You made a comment regarding not understanding why we're investing in homes and what the association is doing is partly should go to some developer to do. When you're living in an area where there's a high crime rate, it is difficult to get someone to invest in that area. The question comes is, do you want to help to improve the safety of that community, hire more police officers, place more people in danger, or have some investment in terms of improving that small area, that neighborhood? And I will stand on the fact that the city made a good investment in improving those areas where seniors are more safe. They can sit on their porches, but if they had not invested, I don't know who would have. And as a result of the investment, developers have come in to want to invest and build homes. I would welcome sitting down with whomever, have a discussion with you, so you can understand our community a little bit better and see why we've made that investment. Do we want to do this long term? No. But somebody has to take some sort of initiative to improve the quality of life of some folks who, for the first time ever in their lives, their children are in their own bed and not sleeping with so many other family members. But they're in safe homes and safe neighborhoods.
And, you know, nobody is going to argue the need to provide safety. And certainly law enforcement is a core government service, and there's no doubt that we need to fund that. I think the question becomes, who develops a neighborhood and who invests in the neighborhood? And whether or not in the long run, the idea of more government spending is going to produce more job opportunities for folks, because, you know, owning a home is certainly a huge step, but when people are losing their jobs and when there is no money in the economy and when there is no development period and there's no incentive to come to Aiken and invest in your neighborhoods, if there is no incentive to create a business and hire people to work here, and that really is kind of the question that I think we have to answer, and these are tough questions and they won't be resolved necessarily in sound bites, but we do want to say we have a lot of research to back this up and a lot of other ways that we think you could create a more open environment for private sector so that they would be not only willing, but that it would benefit the private sector to come in and redevelop those neighborhoods.
Well, all you have to do is look back 10, 15 years ago, downtown Aiken, and see how many storefronts stores were not opening here. People were not coming downtown to invest. And certainly the investment and the decision that City Council made in terms of investing in the downtown area has brought businesses to the downtown area. So,
Can I ask you a question, Ashley?
Sure.
According to the South Carolina Policy Council, you have a fact sheet on the South Carolina County tax quotient, and it shows Aiken. It says that while business climate varies greatly among municipalities within the same county, this data set aggregates municipal data up to the county level. So I assume it aggregates everything within Aiken, and we're half of what the national level is and
okay.
about 10th in the state here, which appears from this that when you take everything to account, just not the business license, but other taxes and other fees, mm-hmm. that we as a county and we as a city are doing pretty good compared to the national and compared to South Carolina. Correct?
Let me see that. Yep, now I do. If you can show me what I'm looking at, because I want to make sure I'm looking at the same thing you are, Roger. Let's look at the same thing.
I just want to make sure that, because I gave that to council
okay.
tonight.
Okay. That's the county level? Oh, what you're saying is what our research associate is saying is the numbers you're looking at are a combination of county and city.
Correct.
So that where you show a little bit lower burden because your county has a little bit lower burden, and by the way, a significantly lower unemployment rate also. Whereas if you look at the city, if you separate that out, that might look a little different, Roger, and we'll be happy to do that.
Well,
if you all are interested in that data, and I think what we want to do is invite you to give us your research questions, because if you're genuinely asking, all right, you know what, we think our taxes are pretty low, but if they could be lower, and if that would benefit our businesses more, and if folks out there would be able to produce more jobs and invest in their families more, that we would all agree that would be a good thing, and that we want to do that. So we're more than happy to work with you to ask some of those questions if you want to.
I'm just looking at the data that you guys had developed and shows that, again, it says the municipal data and the county data together.
Right, combined.
Combined
right.
Shows that Aiken is...
Right, if you're including the county, it has a lower tax burden. Now, I do want to say this. Tell me if I'm wrong. Does the county of Aiken have a business license tax?
No.
Right. Okay, so maybe when you're averaging in the county, which doesn't have this tax, and the city, which does, maybe it kind of brings the average down a little bit of your tax burden, right? Yeah.
Let me just make a couple of comments. Your data is very intriguing, quite frankly, and it comes in an opportune time because
sure.
very shortly we're going to start to put together a budget. And essentially what you're telling us is that our growth rate is higher than inflation and our spending
right.
is higher than CPI and the growth rate
right.
and so forth. And while it is true that we have not raised the millage rate, that certainly doesn't mean the taxes haven't gone up. Assessments have caused
right.
taxes to go up.
That's right.
And
in other areas, they have gone up. I think that's why you see such an increase in government spending, right?
I've had serious discussions on an effort to get rid of the business license tax. There's only two choices a city has, really. Are we going to have it? And if we have it, what are the rates going to be? Everything
mm-hmm.
else, the state lays it out. And there's very little choice.
You're absolutely right.
Seems to be a discussion about some programs that Greenville are doing that I hope we will eventually discuss. Some people feeling that they're giving some preference to certain kinds of businesses, and that might not be in accordance with the law and what have you. And we've had those kinds of
mm-hmm.
discussions as well, and I'd like to continue them.
Sure.
There's no question as a Republican, I'm obliged to say lower taxes are good.
I think that's fair enough. Yes. I do think when you talk about preferential treatment to businesses, you know, they are moving at least in the direction of recognizing that tax relief is a good thing. The problem is they're sort of picking and choosing who gets it instead of giving it to everybody, which is the right way to do it.
And that said, the next step for us is very difficult because you've looked at our numbers
mm-hmm.
and our business license from just local businesses, $2.1 million.
Right.
And we're under the impression that we could not get rid of that without subjecting ourselves to a lawsuit from other companies that are paying the business license tax, insurance companies, telephone companies, and so forth. Now, that represents $8 million. And out of a $40 million budget, I'll tell you, I don't know of a government agency that could cut 20% and survive. How much could we cut? I don't know. You know, could we cut 2%, 4%, 8%? I don't.
there was a number there, maybe.
Right.
But if you're going to cut, there needs to be a reason that you're going to cut. And part of it, of course, is to stimulate local business. That's good.
Right.
So what you've done is given us some things to hone in on. And as I said, it's an opportune time to get information because May 3rd we're going to have our first session on our budget. And honestly, I can't speak for the rest of the council. I'm only new. I'm only here 3 years, but I don't think we approach the budget from the final number. We get to the final number when we get there. We don't say we're going to cut our budget by 1% this year, therefore this is how much we have to spend and where's it going to go. And we are well regarded by lots of folks. There are a lot of people that want to move here. If there wasn't a recession, we'd probably be dealing with massive growth. As soon as the property in Florida starts to be sold, we better watch out because there's going to be a lot of folks coming to Aiken. But I thank you for the data, and I hope we can continue to have a dialogue.
Of course.
Because it's what you've highlighted is important. We can quibble a little bit about the numbers, but the theory, at least, we're spending more maybe than we should be.
Thank you
for doing what you're doing.
I can tell you that URS, that I think I'm estimating it pays about $200,000 in taxes. We'd love to get rid of that. To about $10 billion.
Actually, we are open to more talks.
Good. Certainly. I'm glad to hear that and appreciate it. And I'm sure the taxpayers out there appreciate that you're open to more talks.
Yeah.
We're here to help anytime. Thank you. Thanks.
I just want to end on a little note because I'd like to take advantage of a tax cut, too. My wife has a very modest business. She makes more than I do as mayor. But last year, she had to pay a license fee of $50.20. And I'd like to cut that in half if I could.
Okay.
That is a 0.28%.
All right.
So, Mr. Mayor, I think we might have some other business people that
okay.
want to.
Okay, sure. We're not going anywhere.
So.
I'm Dee Vauders, and Ashley is here because I asked her to come. I'm a board member of the South Carolina Policy Council, and I believe in the principles she laid out today. And I believe in the data because I've seen the research put out by the Policy Council, and it's strong stuff, and I've met our team. So I look forward. I think that she did ask Mayor if she could come back one time, and at that point you weren't interested. I hope today that you are.
I'm sorry.
I think at that point you weren't.
I was very interested. Don't say I was not interested.
Okay. Dick, did you ask if Ashley could come back again?
We met with you, as a matter of fact, and Ashley and
for the
Roger.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah,
did I ask you if Ashley needed to come back before the City Council meeting? And you had an email from Roger Mayer saying it wasn't necessary?
I think that I can't speak for the mayor. He can defend himself. Very much enjoyed that meeting. I'm not sure that they thought as much as I did about further discussions with them.
Okay.
But the mayor,
I just wanted to clarify that. But the fact that
she's here is a reflection of the interest we have in what she had to say.
Well, I think the fact that she's here, too, and I want to thank Dick Dewar, who has been talking to me for probably well over 2 years about this issue and agreed to help us, the business community, at least come forward today and present our case. So I want to thank Dick for that. And I just have a couple of comments. And as you know, I'm passionate about this subject. Mm-hmm. I've been talking about this subject for 2 years. It's not a fair tax. It's not fair. I don't think anybody, we can discuss whether how the state designed it was fair or the fact that the city has to take it as is. I know that. But any tax based on gross receipts is simply not fair. And you have the option. You have the option to figure out how to cut the budget enough to allow for the $2.1 million. Now, I'll get through some comments. If you have any questions, if any other business owners want to tell their story, I hope you guys will listen. As you know, the businesses that are located in the city pay city and county property tax. We pay city and county tax on equipment, fixtures, and furnishings. We pay the city for our water, and many of us pay the city for our trash pickup. In addition, we pay the business license tax, and many city business owners also own a home in the city. That means that we also have property tax on our homes and pay for city services there as well. The list of taxes paid to the city does not include those that we pay to the state, like the corporate income tax and the unemployment tax, etc. And I could go on and on and on. I could talk about the medical license fees and the DHEC fees and the lab fees just in our small medical practice. I know where the $7.1 billion in the fees come from. Ask any business owner. They'll tell you where they come from. It's another tax. But not only do we pay taxes, we provide the jobs for citizens of Aiken. What, the city has 400 employees who all got a 1% salary increase last year? But we provide the vast majority of the jobs. And those people go out and they pay their city property tax, and they pay for water, and they pay for trash, etc. We're also the ones who are among the first to give to local charities and auctions. When you look at the sponsor events for the or the sponsor list for the events for the Child Advocacy Center, Star Riding and Driving, Helping Hands, and Children's Place, you will find many of our names at the top of the list. In other words, the businesses of Aiken are the backbone of the community. I am here to promote the business community of Aiken and to ask for tax relief. We need tax relief for those who are truly taxed enough already. This is a tough time for business owners, and I am requesting that when you convene on May 3rd to start the budgeting process, you will keep these words in mind and eliminate the business license tax for those of us who are already overtaxed. I have spoken at length with Senator Shane Massey on the subject, and he has researched the subject, and in his legal opinion, finds that what we're asking for is in fact reasonable and will not leave the city open to future lawsuits. The city of Greenville has been doing something similar since the year 2000 and has watched their business community flourish. I'm asking for you to think outside the box and support your local business community and ask how, not say, no, we can't cut. Start with nothing, start with zero, and you'll find your $2.1 million. Thanks.
Thank you, Vivian.
Yelcher?
My name is J.B. Miller. I do not live in the city. I have a small office in the city that I pay taxes on all the time. I pay business license taxes, and now I'm renting that little office, and of course I'm paying taxes on the gross receipts from the office, not taking into consideration any of the expense of the building. The gentleman that is renting the business pays for a city license or a business license. But my main thing that bothers me is I live in the county. They figured up my taxes and said, oh, wait a minute, you don't live in the city, yours is double. Now, anybody in the city here that pays a tax in whatever amount your tax is, if you lived in the county, you would be paid double for that business license. And it liked to knock me out of my chair when the young man told me that. And I just feel like, you know, there's a lot of discrimination in this. I'm not against any race, creed, or anybody else. But something needs to be done about this business license. Plus the fact, why just because my residence happens to be outside the city limits that I have to pay double what a city resident has to pay. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Mr. Mayor, oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. Did you want to say?
I just think that we may need to do like a workshop or something and look at some of this again. I don't know. I think we need to do that. I think the gentleman I spoke with when he was coming in thought that he was coming to something similar to a work session on that, and maybe we need to set something up. I'm not sure, but that's how I'm feeling right now, is that I think they might even appreciate it.
Okay.
Yes,
ma'am.
Nothing comes out of it.
Excuse me. My name is Debbie Nix, and I was born in Aiken. Absolutely love it. Been to Rome and back, and choose Aiken. My husband and I have owned our business for 23 years, and it's been a good business for us. We've paid 100% of our employees' health insurance. We're a very, very small business for all 23 years. And I love the city of Aiken. I do. Have four homes here within the city. And however, there's a couple of things that are concerning to me as a business owner. For one thing, I think there needs to be a conversation between you guys and the small business people. We are forgotten right now, and we are taking a huge hit. We are terrified of what's going to be happening in the next year. We don't know if our doors are going to be open. And downtown Aiken has taken a huge hit. There's some empty buildings there now. We're the workers. As a matter of fact, sometimes I feel guilty sleeping because we work so hard. I don't know if any of you on, and you may have, on a Monday morning when you turned the key to your office, you knew that week you had to produce $10,000 just to meet payroll and payroll taxes. Our experience has been, when our office moved into the city of Aiken, we were told we had to landscape. Our office is located right on the edge of the city of Aiken, right beside LaFarge Concrete Company that dumps a tremendous amount of concrete dust on our office and vehicles. When the landscape folks came out, they told us that we had to put in a sprinkler system, we had to put in crepe myrtles, and we had to block the view of LaFarge Concrete Company from our office, which is a white little cottage with a white picket fence and very nicely manicured. We look at the city's industrial park across the street from us on Willow Run Road. There's no sprinkler system there. The grass gets 3 feet tall before somebody cuts it. However, that's not what we have to abide by. That was kind of tough. The next thing that I don't understand is why. This is an affront to me. We are required to bring our income tax returns for our business license. We also operate in Richmond and Columbia County, far much larger than this city. When I asked them about it, they couldn't even believe that someone would do that. I think that needs to be totally reexamined. If you think that there is a problem, then you investigate. But for all of us to bring our tax returns, that is not your information to have. And I really, really disagree with that. And I would ask that someone research that. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. Anyone else like to speak?
All right, good evening. Similar stories to what I'm just hearing.
Could you give us...
I'm sorry, I'm James Yawn.
James, okay.
Similar stories. I have my issues with the same things that you have already heard. I want to take it a step further. I am neither a city resident, nor is my business in the city. And I would like to know which of you represents me, because there seems to be an issue with, what is it, no taxation without representation? I would really like to know who represents me. I've recently found out, after 13 years of business, that I am now to undergo this city business license tax. And I've got to tell you, it hasn't been a pretty experience. I have had phone calls threatening to arrest me because I was operating in the city without a license. I have had business turn me away because they believe that I couldn't perform in the city of Aiken. And I simply would like to know who I need to speak with on this board that I can gripe to, that I can get answers from. It's a fair question.
Where is your business?
I am on Old Airport Road.
Old Airport Road.
Correct.
And you're not in the city?
I'm not in the city.
Nor does he live in the city.
Well, where are you on Old Airport
Road? What kind of business are you operating?
I'm a florist.
Delivering into the city?
Delivering into the city.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you're deriving income from your operations in the city of Aiken, which obligates you to have a city business license.
That is what they have told me. And Mr. Kirkland in the permit office, right, he's been very accommodating, but he seems to just basically tell me that I am to pay this business license tax, and that's just the way it is.
How much is your business license tax, may I ask?
It has not been figured out. I am 3 months into finding out that I am now subject, after 13 years of business.
Now, would it be based on your total gross or just the business you do in a city?
From what I have derived from Mr. Kirkland, it is based on my deliveries to a city resident. And up until recently, I did not know there was that list. A list has been provided. To say it's a bookkeeping nightmare to delineate between city residences and not, it takes about, I've done January and February, it takes about 2.5 hours per month just to delineate between the two. Maybe it's a poor old mom and pop business that can't afford the latest in computer software, but either way, I'm having to go line by line, go through the list that has been provided me, and figure out on my own, is this city, is this not city? I have also been told that this will now open me up to audits. Somebody just had the gripe that they need to bring you their income tax statement. How am I going to provide you? It doesn't have any basis for what I, or the information you need. Who can, on this board, can sit down with me and explain this to me? Who is my representative?
Well, essentially, we're all your representative because we're the folks to blame. We're the folks responsible for the mess you're in.
Okay.
And quite frankly, you're probably among the worst examples of a business license fee problem that I can imagine, because if you've got 250 deliveries in a month, you've got to somehow look up all 250 addresses and figure out who's in the city and who isn't. I think it's good, although I understand it took you an awfully long time to get a list of city addresses, but
sure,
every time we have a meeting, that can change when we annex properties into the city. So,
and I don't even know how to get updates to that list.
Well, I think, and when you started out, I don't think you even knew there was a list, and I'm not sure there is a... I don't know, Roger, if we generate a list for retail folks outside the city who do business within the city.
Have you tried to ask them if they're in the city or not?
It sounds like a simple question.
Well, I don't mean to downplay it, but
I understand.
I mean, they should know whether they're in the city.
Basically, when I'm taking an order, it is a gift given to whoever is receiving it. To go to that person... Oh, by the way, here are your flowers. You in the city? Other suggestions have been made. Basically, if there's a horse on the sign, it's city. That's not exactly true either. to further my gripe, since y'all are listening, and I need questions answered. I have competitors locally. I have competitors in neighboring cities. I have competitors countrywide, and I have competitors worldwide. How many of them are paying the city of Aiken's business license tax? I find it another fair question.
It is a fair question, and as you spoke regarding the mountains of stuff to try to keep up with, there are. What occurred to me is that I know of vendors that are doing business that are selling goods out of Columbia, for example, in Richmond County. Mm-hmm. And how do we track that?
Sure, and I brought the question up to Mr. Kirkland, who is, I would assume, is in charge of patrolling for this, for lack of a better word. And I don't know how he could do it. But well, how is putting the license fee on me, because I'm a brick-and-mortar store here in your town, versus Mr. Internet 1-800-Flowers that delivers in a box through FedEx? He's not paying the same tax. FedEx is paying you a little bit on what they deliver here. But I've got to compete worldwide, not just with Joe down the street.
I think your concern is a good one for us to explore and to investigate as to why tax you, and given the burden of a small business that you're enduring with trying to track who lives where.
Who lives where.
Right.
I'm still working with Mr. Kirkland. We are trying to figure this out.
And Lex is here if you'd like to ask those questions, Lex. Counsel.
Oh, I think it highlights a need for us to get a little closer to the business community and identify some of these problems and hopefully do what we can. There may not be much. I've never liked the income tax form, and it's distressing to find that we're the only ones locally that do it.
But even that income tax,
it's in an effort to be fair.
How is that going to apply to me?
Yeah. Well, it can't. I've asked the question many times, how do we deal with businesses that are located out of the city that have to pay the taxes? And the only answer I've ever received is, we just accept whatever they tell us. I mean, that doesn't make any sense when we're taking our own businesses and say, I want to see your tax return. I mean, there's inconsistency here. It's something we should deal a little better with.
And I would just prefer fairness. If you're going to tax me, I want everybody else taxed as well. I want all of my competitors taxed as well.
And certainly inside the city they are.
Yeah.
We have no way of identifying the internet businesses that I know of.
Sure, and I understand there are interstate commerce laws that apply to them. But when it comes to Little Miss Sally that does it out of her home in a local golf neighborhood, I'm sure she's not subject to that business license tax. I have to compete with that.
Did you say that Lex was in the audience?
Yeah.
Lex, you want to respond?
Lex, where are you? Perhaps you can answer some of these points.
Them too much on the spot, and they're not prepared.
James brought up.
Just thinking, need a book session.
About half of our licenses are for businesses outside the city.
Okay, what question? My answer, Lex Kirkland. What's the question?
Did you hear his question?
His comment.
How do we about catch folks?
Mm-hmm. And determine.
We have two part. Well, which question are we answering?
Both.
Okay. We have two part-time business license inspectors whose primary job is to patrol the city and find folks that are operating without a license. So, as far as him being concerned, we have two part-time business license inspectors whose job it is to patrol the city and to do various things to identify folks like he's concerned about operating without a business license. So I think we do a very good job of identifying them. He's concerned about his competitors. Well over half of the business businesses that are licensed to operate in the city are not located in the city. So, you know, I feel like we're identifying those as best we can. I think we're doing a great job of it.
You're saying outside the city, or you're trying to find out who they are as well?
When they come into the city to operate, certainly we find those every day. We identify hundreds of those every year.
Do you have some, James, that you know of that...
I have asked for a list. And the reply was that the city does not provide that list, so that I would know who was operating within the city without a license and who was not with a license. That list could be provided based on a fee that would be figured out or calculated based on what it took to produce that list.
He's talking about a Freedom of Information request.
Right.
He asked us for a list that the city doesn't generate. He asked us for information that the city doesn't have readily available. He asked for information that we would have to prepare and figure out how to provide to him. The lists and whatnot that we run routinely have a lot of protected information on them, a lot of information that our business owners wouldn't want us to give out to folks. So what he's talking about was we will gladly provide him a list. He's got to be specific about what he needs, and then we'll have to figure out what the cost would be to produce such a listing.
Well, why can't we put a list of businesses with licenses on the internet? Be transparent about it. I mean, we don't have to provide confidential information. We don't have to provide how much business license tax they pay, but... And isn't that something we could put on the internet?
I think putting
a
listing of businesses that have a license is something that we could do, as long as we didn't include any protected information.
Sure.
What he asked me for was something that we do not produce currently. So
I think he's primarily focused, honestly, in making sure that if he pays it, his competitors pay it. And
sure.
If he's got a list that he can look at, that's going to make your job easier, I would think, that people will start making sure. I mean, part of the important part of this program is that it be fair to everybody. I mean, it's not fair for, if we have one, and I know there's a move afoot to get rid of it, but if we have one, it ought to be as fair as it can be, and it's not fair for businesses outside of the city that do business in the city not to pay, and it's not fair for businesses that are in the city not to pay. This would, I think, help and maybe give you some leads of people who should pay and don't.
Certainly.
But that would be something that I think council would need to discuss and approve, but I would see nothing wrong with putting that list on our website.
You see? Yeah, and again, our list has 4,000 plus names on it, and that we could go ahead and divulge as long as it doesn't give information concerning what their business license is or anything else involved with it.
Well, and perhaps we could do it by... You know, in a way that would make it easier for people to look up, so if you want to look up florist, you could search for florist instead of 4,000 alphabetically.
Again, we don't have it by category like that.
You don't.
What would it take?
We have it by class.
Well, class would help, because then the florists are all going to be in the same class.
And so there's 8 classes.
Yes, yeah.
So there would be maybe 500-600 names, 700 each one.
But that would be better than... I mean, it would at least help this gentleman in giving him a sense that we're fair.
Well, let's do that. Let's do it. How long does it take to get that done?
It would be a short amount of time. We could figure out how to run a query to put that information together.
Okay. All right.
But I agree. We should have a work session and talk about the program.
I have another question,
Mr. Mayor. Oh, okay, just a minute. James, that will help you?
Oh, absolutely. I said earlier, he has been as accommodating as he can be.
I know, he's a very accommodating person.
I'm a unique situation because of the business I am and the way that my business is run. But I would like to go back to my original question. Who is my representative for this? Who do I need to go to for answers?
Well, I think you need to come to Lex.
I think you're doing
it
right now.
You're doing the right thing there.
Do you need, why do you need all the company? Are you going to be in the enforcement business? by knowing which companies are paying their business tax and which ones aren't?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a skewed way of looking at it, sure.
Okay.
If I can help him do his job, why wouldn't I?
Yeah, yeah.
But in answer to your question, you work with the staff, and if the staff doesn't satisfy you, the second and fourth Monday of every month we're here. We'd be more than happy to listen to your concerns.
Yeah. Well, even
and
before
do our
that,
best to resolve
call
it.
Us up. Okay. Call the city manager first. And then you can call me. Or anyone else, but... Because we'd like to get to the end of this and help you out, certainly. All of these situations are good that we've heard so far. And I mean, good in, from the standpoint of we need to do something about them, or at least try to.
At least the constructive side of going forward with it.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Thanks, y'all.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Lex.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yes, sir. Speak up, and you can sit down there if you want to stay.
I failed to ask a while ago, why am I penalized double business license because I live outside of the city limits?
You want Lex to answer?
I was quoted a price.
Yeah.
If I came in and said, oh my goodness, you live outside the city, so yours is double. And
okay.
How is this?
Lex is going to try to answer that, and we'll see what his answer is there. But,
he told me to write a double check, is what he told me.
The business license tax, businesses are placed in categories depending on a couple things. The type of business they're in determines the rate. And then an outside city business, a business that doesn't have a physical location in the city, has different reporting requirements. Unlike the inside city businesses, the outside city business only reports what they do in the city, but their tax rate is double that of what an inside city business is. The thought, I guess, you know, when council is setting the rates and why it's been like that at cities for decades is that the inside city businesses already pay other taxes, other fees, other things to the city.
I pay property taxes, you know, the man says he pays for a business license. I'm paying for a business license and have been for years. I've dealt with you before. You tell me and I appreciate it. But still, nobody can explain to me why, just because I'm the outside of the city, I have to pay double.
First of all, let me say this. This is something we'll be looking into. Okay?
Let me quote to you, sir, from page 11 of our ordinance. Excuse me.
Oh, no, you go ahead. You got it.
Unless otherwise specifically provided, all minimum fees and rates shall be doubled for non-residents and itinerants having no fixed principal place of business within the municipality. So the ordinance stipulates that you must pay double. Doesn't make it right, but it's in the ordinance.
It states that because I live outside of the city and I have a piece of property inside the city, that I have to pay double for the business license.
Yes. All fees associated with a business license, if you live outside the city, are doubled.
Okay.
So the building he's talking about is in the city.
Okay, if we can hold it down to one conversation at a time, and whoever wants to speak, please come up here and speak, except this gentleman who, he can stay there.
He does not have a business inside the city, is that what you're saying, Lex?
I'm assuming his business location that he's using on the application is an outside city business. That would be why we would put it in the outside city classification.
But the building itself is inside the city?
But he rents it.
And you rent it to someone else who has the business, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He pays a business license.
Okay.
When I came in to pay mine, he said, I failed to realize you live outside the city. I live outside the city. My building is inside the city.
If you had a commercial...
Double what a resident would pay.
a commercial rental property business could have rental properties located in various locations. Could be many cities, could be many states. If a commercial rental property business or rental property business is located outside the city, they're only going to report the receipts from those properties within the city of Aiken, and they're going to pay a double rate. That's how it's set up.
I'm an individual. One little building that I paid for the years that I was in business of 700 square feet. And just because I live outside of the current limit city, I've got to pay double taxes on the gross receipts. And I know you got staggered rates for different things. But it was just unbelievable when you told me